Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4. It is a Sunday night into Monday morning. Monday meaning my dad's going to call in and tell a joke a little bit later on. And that's coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you would like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. Eric Childress and Steve Procopi. Obviously, we've got a couple of new movies that that are streaming that we can talk about, but we're also going to talk about some of the best documentaries that you can watch as you're quarantined into the house. Jim Ryan is a music writer and entertainment writer for Forbes.com, Daily Herald, and Chicago Now. We're going to talk about some of the things that he's written, some of the interviews that he's done. Obviously, he's not going out and seeing concerts at the moment because no one is. But he still continues to write about music and entertainment, and we'll talk to Jim. Always a lot of fun when Jim is on. Every morning at 2:30, weekday morning at 2:30, we play classic Johnny Carson stuff. Johnny Carson Show you can watch on Antenna TV every night. And we're going to listen to some classic Carson. Sometimes we'll do some stand-up. Sometimes we do interviews. Sometimes we'll just play back sketches and stuff. But we got Don Rickles and Glenn Campbell. That's a combination right there. So... Little Richard, as you know, passed away, 87 years old, the architect of rock and roll. We'll talk about him and his impact on music and some essential Little Richard songs. And more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for getting in here, and we'd love to talk to you. So happy Mother's Day. Hope everybody had a nice weekend. Tom Hush is my producer. Tom, did you have a nice Mother's Day?
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was all on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
But it was nice, took the time, had a long conversation with my mom and my grandmother, so that was nice.
There you go.
Very nice.
Yeah, very, very cool. Yeah, so happy Mother's Day to everybody out there, and I hope it was a safe and fun weekend for you. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and all that stuff is coming up on the show. I have to get my bearings a little bit because we were in a different studio for a few months, and now we're back in the studio. See, we've been working in Studio A for a few months, but normally we work out of Studio D, and now we're back in Studio D, which is kind of our home studio, and I'm discombobulated. Tom, how are you handling things in there?
You know what? It's like riding a bike. You never really forget. It's just everything shifted to the other side.
It's the other side, because yeah, it's the opposite. The other studio is set up in an opposite way than this one is. But we're back in. We're back in Studio D, and we're happy to be here. And there it is. So, you know, the McHenry Drive-In, the McHenry County Drive-In was opened up this weekend. And Friday night, it was free to get in. I know a couple of people who went. Our old friend Colin went. Did anybody go? Did you go? 312-981-7200 if you went out to the McHenry Drive-In. I mean, I saw the footage, the in pictures. I mean, there were lines. The cars were lined up for like a mile. And so it was an unqualified success. And people clearly wanted to get out of the house. And, you know, I don't even think it mattered what they were showing. They could have showed any movie. They showed the Flintstones and the Jurassic Park over the weekend. And Friday night was free. You couldn't get in. It was sold out. I mean, it was nuts. Colin couldn't even get in on Friday. So he and his girlfriend went on Saturday, and they said it was a blast. You know, people were having a really great time. Everybody was in their car, obeying all the rules and everything. And they're going to be open again on Friday if anybody's interested in going. Are they showing the same movies? Do we know what they're showing?
I know they're going to be showing Tommy Boy.
Oh, man. Oh, Tommy Boy. No, I wish I had a car. Not like I can't watch Tommy Boy in my house, you know, because I've only seen it 8,000 times. Well, if you went, we want to hear from you if you went out to the McHenry Drive-In. And 312-981-7200. And slowly, I guess businesses are going to start to slowly open. Are there any businesses that you want to give a shout out to that you've been working with during this, and maybe restaurants that you've ordered from? Because I know a lot of people are ordering food, and so if you want to give a shout out to any of these restaurants or any businesses, And if you went to the McHenry Drive-In, it's Tommy Boy. Wait, there's another comedy, right?
Yeah, and Billy Madison.
Oh, my God. Billy Madison and Tommy Boy. The place is going to be packed. It's going to be packed. Any chance to see Tommy Boy on the big screen at the drive-in? Tommy Boy at the drive-in? So, yeah, interesting twist on Mother's Day with this pandemic that's going on right now. Obviously, we'd have loved to have seen our moms, you know, and gone out to dinner. You know, we would have gone to like we normally would. We celebrate all the big holidays and stuff like that at Gale Street, at the Gale Street Inn. They're doing curbside service, by the way, if you want to get some of the best ribs ever. They're doing curbside service, so that's another business that you want to give a shout-out to. George Karzis over there at the Gale Street Inn, greatest restaurant on the planet, safely working with you to get those ribs. So I can't remember the last time I was at the drive-in. Long time ago. We used to go all the time. The old Twin Drive-In in Wheeling. That was the one that we went to pretty regularly. So... All right, how was your weekend? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We would love to hear from you. And we got Walter Jacobson's perspective coming up in a little while, but we would love to hear from you. How was your weekend? If you went to the McHenry Drive-In, we want to hear from you. If there are any businesses or restaurants that you'd like to give a shout-out to, let's do that. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. It's Sunday night into Monday morning, and Monday morning my dad always calls in and tells a joke, so he'll tell us a joke. We are going to talk with Eric and Steve about the new movie releases, and since we're all stuck at home, and we got a whole bunch of documentaries that we're going to talk about that you can watch. Jim Ryan, our music and entertainment writer buddy. At Radio Jim Ryan is where you can read him. We've got a bunch of stories that he's working on and interviews and stuff like that he's done. We're going to talk music, and we'll play a round of Rock of Ages, which is a music trivia game that we play whenever Jim is on. Our phones are open right now. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Anybody go to the McHenry Drive-In? Tom, you saw did you see some of the photos and the pictures of how many people were out there?
Yeah, there were. I was following the whole thing on their Facebook page and what owner Scott was, you know, talking about. He said that there were folks on Friday lining up at like 11 a.m.
Wow,
on the street in their cars, which just goes to show how much people really want to get out in a safe way. And I feel like this is a good middle ground in a lot of ways. You get to still be in your car. You know, they took the hit on concessions, which is really the moneymaker for any movie theater, just so that people can come and see a film and just do something different.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great. I think it's great. And I'm clearly people want this. This is like perfect timing, you know. And I mean, they're going to be jammed this weekend. Tommy Boy and Billy Madison. I mean, it's going to be. There's going to be people lined up at 2 o'clock in the morning on Thursday. But yeah, it's nice, man. You know, just to get out. And I mean, they're doing concessions, but they're doing them safely. The concession stand is not open, but they are going to have carts where they will safely, you know, get you some snacks and stuff if you want. But are there any other businesses that you want to give a shout out to? Restaurants that you ordered from or anything like that? Yeah, I've basically just been staying in. I ordered a couple of pizzas over the week, over the weekend. But yeah, no, just in watching the TV. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in here. You want to give out a shout out to a business or something. We would love to give them some attention. So you know. I'm not the biggest fan of Guy Fieri. he drives me nuts, in fact. I mean, I watch Diners, Drives, and Dives because I love the format, and I love the idea of showcasing new places and new restaurants, you know. So, like, maybe you, if you go and visit that city, you want to go and check it out. And I love it when he does the local stuff here. But he drives me nuts. But I got to say, he's a good guy, man. I don't know if you heard about this, but Guy Fieri raised over $20 million for struggling restaurant workers. Over $20 million. That's great. Because, you know, the people who are in the restaurant business are taking a huge hit. Restaurants are, you know, and businesses like that are really taking massive hits right now. You know, people who wait tables and bartend and manage and work in restaurants. It's terrible. So Guy Fieri is once again stepping up to help people in need, raising more than $20 million for restaurant workers who have lost their jobs due to the coronavirus pandemic. So far, he's helped tens of thousands of people through his relief efforts, and he has no plans of slowing down. On Friday, Fieri announced that the Restaurant Employee Refund Relief Fund, which is the RERF, which he started in partnership with the National Restaurant Association Educational Foundation, is awarding 10,000 new grants to restaurant workers. The foundation has approved 40,000 grants total since launching last month, the celebrity chef revealed in an interview with TMZ on Friday. I started to think about my brothers and sisters in the restaurant business and a bunch of restaurants that I was closing. We got to do something, Fieri said of the relief fund. The mayor of Flavortown, said that the fund has now raised $21.5 million for struggling restaurant industry workers since lockdowns were implemented nationwide less than 2 months ago. Fieri said that he personally sent video messages to CEOs from PepsiCo, the Coca-Cola company, Uber Eats, and other companies to partner with the fund. Celebrities and over 40 big-name brands have also joined the cause, including Food Network, Live Nation, Corona, TikTok, and Netflix, among others. As long as the money comes in, we're going to continue to give these grants, said Fieri. Staggering 29 million Americans lost their livelihoods in April as COVID-19 shuttered stores, factories, and offices and canceled events nationwide. With many restaurants and bars across the country closed or limited to takeout service, the restaurant industry has suffered billions of dollars in losses, no clear path to recovery. So far, the Restaurant Employee Relief Fund has awarded $500 grants to 40,000 applicants. Restaurant workers who have been impacted financially over the pandemic can apply for a grant on the RERF website. However, due to an overwhelming response of more than 60,000 applicants, the fund has temporarily stopped accepting new applications. Fieri remains hopeful for the future of the industry. I think people are going to be fired up, gung-ho, and ready to get out there and visit their restaurants a lot more than they were prior to this pandemic. That's a straight-up great thing to do, man. You know what I mean? He owns restaurants. He knows what's going on. He came up through the restaurant business, you know? How many people are struggling right now? It's nuts. So Guy Fieri, man, did something really good. $20 million for struggling restaurant workers. That's a great story. It's a great story. You ever watch Guy Fieri?
Not particularly, but I've always found him to be an amusing character.
Yeah, he's something. I'll give you that. He annoys the hell out of me, but this is a really amazing thing he's done. I mean, good for him, man. Good on him.
He did introduce me to one of my favorite spots around the Loyola area, Boppin' Grill.
Oh, sure.
Which there's a couple of locations, and it's a great restaurant. Really tasty. Really, really tasty. But I never had – they do, like, Korean-style stuff. They do kimchi. Mm-hmm. Which I had no idea what that was until I tried it. It's essentially, like, spiced, pickled cabbage, right?
Yeah.
Changed my palate.
Yeah.
And I was never really into spicy stuff, and then all of a sudden I tried that. And so I guess I can give props to Guy Fieri for that.
Well, you know, the thing is, also, I mean, obviously raising $20 million for struggling restaurant workers is fantastic at this time. And, you know, I mean, his businesses are taking a hit too. But also, it's amazing the testimonials that you hear from the restaurants or places that he showcases on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, because I would say 99% of the businesses that appear on that show, the business goes through the roof. People just say as soon as the episode airs, you know, within days they're packed, like the restaurants are packed. So he does a lot of good for the restaurant businesses. You know, he really does. Say what you will about his personality or his persona or whatever. The guy's heart's in the right spot. I mean, it really is, you know. Because every business that they've ever done a follow-up with said that as soon as the episode aired, like their business doubled or tripled, which is awesome, you know. So, yeah. I mean, I watched the Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. Like I said, I watch it because I really like the format, and I love those kind of shows where they take you around and they showcase other, you know, restaurants and businesses and things like that. I think that's awesome.
Well, and the places they go to are interesting. You know, these aren't just the typical high-minded food places that some food shows go to, which is fine. You know, it's cool to check out the most elite of the elite eating establishments. But as the title implies, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Right.
These are maybe like your local hole in the wall, maybe kind of a greasy spoon place.
Well,
that's just putting together some really tasty stuff that you can actually afford and you can go to.
Well, you know that when he's done a bunch of restaurants in this city, he's been here a bunch of times for Diners, Drives, and Dives. And you know he did the diner on Irving, just west of Ashland.
Yeah, Diner Grill, right?
Diner Grill.
Yeah, it's just the counter.
Yep.
Oh.
Slinger. I can't remember who he was with. He had a guest with him that at that time, and oh man, I can't remember who it was. I think I'm pretty sure it's a local guy. But when he visited the Diner Grill, they of course busted out the Slinger. Tom, you ever have a Slinger?
I've not. I've only ever had breakfast food there.
Well,
is that a breakfast item?
The Slinger?
Yeah, I've not had. All I've had was like eggs, hash browns, and bacon.
Wait. Are you not aware what the Slinger is?
I am not aware of the Slinger.
Oh man! And you drink, and you're not aware of what the Slinger is?
Well, yeah, even nearby, there's a nearby place where a friend of mine bartends called Keenan O'Reilly's.
Yeah,
it's like literally right down the street.
Yeah,
but I am not aware. Tell me, what is the Slinger?
Oh man, Tom doesn't know what the Slinger is. We'll have to break. It's I'm really shocked that you've been to the Diner Grill and you've never had a Slinger, or you don't know what a Slinger is, because it's legendary. Yeah, I've never. I can tell you this. I've never had one sober. I can tell you that. I don't think there are a lot of people who have eaten Slingers sober. What's going on in there?
I'm getting yelled at through the door
by producer
Ben.
Yeah, the Slinger, man. He knows. Ben knows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
you're going to have to explain it to me.
All right. We'll do it. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will introduce Tom to the Slinger. You got to have one, man. All right. We will explain the Slinger to Tom. And if you want to jump in here, if you've ever had a Slinger, over at the Diner Grill on Irving, 312-981-7200. Again, featured on Diners, Drives, and Dives. And I wish I could remember who he was with. See if we can find out who he... Maybe it was an... No, I can't remember who it was. Maybe we can look that up. The episode where Guy Fieri goes to the Diner Grill. Because I know he's with someone, because that person is the one that eats the Slinger. So, 312-981-7200. We'll explain what the Slinger is to Tom, my producer, here on 720 WGN.
The girl's got plenty good loving. Me how I know.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you so. She used to be my girl.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Coming up after 12, we're going to talk with Steve Procopi and Eric Childress about some of the new movies that are out that you can stream. And since we're all stuck in, we always try to pick a subject or a genre to recommend for you. And we're going to do documentaries, some of the best documentaries that are now streaming that you can watch from home. And then after 1 o'clock, our good friend Jim Ryan is going to join us, music and entertainment writer for Forbes.com, Daily Herald, and Chicago Now. Always a lot of fun when Jim is here. He's got some stuff that he's written about that we're going to talk about, too. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. So, yeah, competitive eating is a strange thing. You ever watch you watch Man vs. Food, right?
I have watched it, yeah.
Because they've changed. Now, I can't remember the guy's name who, because it used to be Adam Richman. But I can't remember that there's a different guy now. Another big, he's a big dude with a mustache who's the host of Man vs.
Casey Webb.
Yeah. I don't like him as much as Richman. I like Adam Richman. I think he's great. You know, it's funny. They years ago, they were talking with the late great Anthony Bourdain. They were talking with Anthony Bourdain, and they were like, how do you feel about other, you know, traveling and food shows and stuff like that? And he's like, the other shows that are on the network. And he's like, yeah, no, I think that he goes, I enjoy the shows. I think everybody, you know, does the good job. He goes, but I got to tell you, I'm worried about that Richman kid.
As any sane person would be.
Yeah. He put on some pounds, but then, like after the first season, because I watched Man vs. Food from the very beginning. And he put on some pounds, man, between seasons. I remember when he came back for the second season, I'm like, oh, man. Yeah, so I don't know. I can't sit down and eat 15 pounds of food. I just can't, you know what I mean? I just can't do it. I'd be a terrible competitive eater. I don't like hot stuff. I don't like really hot stuff, you know, when they do the, because he did, I remember Richman did this one thing where it was like the hottest wings on the planet or something, and they actually had to put a mask on to pour the pepper into the sauce, into the wing sauce. Like, they literally had to put, well, what we're all wearing now. What we're all wearing. They had to put those on and put the mask on in order to get the, and I can't remember what it was. Scoville. That's what the Scoville, it was like through the roof. So, but, yeah, he did a wing thing where it was like the hottest wings in the world, and he could not, wipe his face. He could not get the sauce off of his face or his hands for, I think it was 5 minutes after he finished. So he had to sit there for 5 minutes with these scalding hot sauce on his face and his hands. And then I remember specifically because then he finally was able to wipe his face off, but he went to the back. I'm not kidding. He went to the back in the kitchen of the restaurant or bar or whatever the hell it was, and stuck his face in the ice machine. He just put his face in the ice machine. Yeah, I don't understand that. I know people who love really hot food, really spicy food. I don't know. I can't do it. I can't do it. I mean, I can handle a little spice, but man, you know, these people, and people love it. And what's Sean, what's his face from Hot?
Sean Evans.
Yeah, Sean Evans. He's on, what's it called? Hot?
Hot, no, it's Hot Ones.
Hot Ones, right. Hot Ones. This is a thing that's on your internet. And he interviews celebrities while they eat chicken wings, and each sauce on each wing gets progressively hotter. So where do you stand on really spicy food?
Now, you know, I think it's interesting. I think it's fun to watch people challenge themselves, but there are people who eat incredibly spicy food on the regular. And, you know, sometimes it's maybe a cultural thing. You know, maybe you come from a country where very spicy food is just commonplace.
Yeah.
So your palate is
yeah.
used to it.
Yeah.
But when it comes to people purposely going out of their way to eat the spiciest thing imaginable because they know it's going to hurt them, I don't really get it. Because don't you want, you don't, at that point, you don't even taste like the wing, you know, if you're eating super
spicy. No, you can't. I mean, if you're eating, if you go to that level where just a drop on your tongue numbs your entire mouth, I don't understand that. But I will say this. Some people love it because there's an endorphin rush.
There is.
And that's legit. That's totally legit. So I think some people do it for that reason as well. But yeah, I can't do the really, really spicy stuff.
We did get Amy Guth to do that on air once.
To do what?
To eat, to take it, basically a match head size droplet of the hottest hot sauce we could get our hands on, which was from the Pepper Palace over at Water Tower. I don't know if it's still there, but this guy came in, the owner of the Pepper Palace came in, and it literally came in a little Bible, like mm-hmm. a little Bible, and he opens it up, and there's this hot sauce. It was like purple or something like that. It was an odd shade of purple, you know, a color that a sauce should not be. So we got a toothpick and got a tiny little match head sized droplet on it, and she put it on her tongue.
Oh, man.
And the experience she had while on the air, it was chronicled for in perpetuity, of her just basically going into a small panic over the fact that she could no longer feel her face. She was finding it difficult to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to immediately go to a break while I was like, are you actually okay? Is she going to be able to continue? And luckily she was. But of course, newsman extraordinaire David Jennings came down and he said, nah, there's no way. It's that hot. It's not that big a deal. Comes in, takes about a little bit more than a match head amount of this purple goop, essentially. Sticks it on his tongue in the old producer booth back at Tribune Tower. And he looks straight at me dead in the eyes and immediately starts sweating.
Yeah.
And he just says, I should not have done that. And I said, no.
No.
You should not have challenged the beast here.
No.
You looked in the face of spice, you laughed, and then it punished you.
I can't believe Amy would do that. Is she now, does Amy like spicy food?
She does, and I'm pretty sure she's made her own hot sauce.
I wouldn't be surprised.
She was very into the hot sauce thing. I think she still is, still really likes hot sauce. And she was like, let's go. Like, give me the hottest one you got. And it was like a science experiment.
No. Yeah, no. No. Just no. All right. Got a break here. The news is coming up. Right, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Skyline Studio. We're back in Studio D. We were working out of Studio A for a few months, and now we're back in Studio D, our old home. coming up, by the way, after 1 o'clock, our good buddy Jim Ryan is going to join us, music and entertainment writer for Forbes.com, Daily Herald, Chicago Now. You can follow him at Radio Jim Ryan. Lots of really fun stuff that he's been writing about, and we'll also play a round of Rock of Ages, which is a music trivia game that we play every time Jim is here. So that's coming up. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke later on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to talk about Little Richard, obviously. And we got Classic Carson from the archives there. We're going to play Don Rickles and Glenn Campbell, which sounds like an interesting combination right there. Every Monday morning, We review the new movies, although we haven't been doing a lot of that lately because, you know, the just new movies have not been coming out. They've been, you know, we've got some stuff that's being streamed, which you can watch at home. And so we'll talk about that, but it's Steve Procopi and Eric Childress join me every Monday morning. And let's say hello to these guys. Eric, how you doing?
Hello. Okay.
All right. And Steve.
Hello.
All right. How you guys been doing?
Been doing. Sort of relegating myself to the fact that probably not going to be going out to enjoy anything of consequence for some time at this point. It seems like we're in for a long haul here.
Yeah.
And, you know, the drive-in might be our best respite for, you know, getting out to see movies. I mean, at this point, that might be the only place that I might even venture out to see, you know, Tenant, if, you know, that still opens in July. So, but yeah.
Okay. All right. Steve, how are you handling it?
Good. Yeah. I mean, honestly, in all the years we've been doing Flashback Weekend, I've never been to the Midway Drive-In, which is Mike and Mia's drive-in. And I got a note from Mia like, "You got to come." I'm like, "This is the thing that's going to get me there." So, and they open up in a couple weeks. So. Mm-hmm. I'll go. I don't care.
Yeah, well,
I don't know where Dixon is, but I'll go.
It's a bit of a haul, Steve.
I'm sure. I could use the drive, honestly.
Yeah, it's a bit of a, it's out there, but now you got to support Mike
of
and
course.
Mia and you know, the Midway drive-ins and all the drive-ins that are out there. I love that the McHenry did so well that there were just like so many people at the McHenry, including our good friend Colin.
Yeah.
He went on Saturday, I believe.
He got shut out on Friday.
He
got shut out.
Yeah, because he couldn't get in.
He made it in.
Yeah.
Yeah, he made it in Saturday.
Incredible.
And there's some talk that the Cascade might actually be reopening.
Oh, wow.
I read some things, some about that in the last week, too.
Wow. That's great. I also, you know, I love some of the movies that they're showing. Like next week, it's Billy Madison and Tommy Boy. And they're gonna. The McHenry's gonna be sold out. I mean, there's gonna be lines around the block for that for those two movies.
Yeah.
You know, these are perfect movies to see at the drive-in. You know, so well, there it is, man. All right, but we do have some new releases that have been streamed, right?
There were probably about 10 new movies put out this week, so we're only going to touch on a fraction of them. But there were so many. Yeah.
All right. Well, first of all. Steve, tell me about the Natalie Wood. Is this that documentary, right?
Yeah, this is premiered on HBO. I believe it was Tuesday.
Okay.
Tuesday.
Yeah, and so it's, you know, not unlike Marilyn Monroe or Sharon Tate, the career of Natalie Wood has sort of been, unfortunately, reduced to the circumstances surrounding her death when she was only 43, but perhaps more than any other actress of her generation, or even prior, Wood's standing in Hollywood as both a performer and sort of this power broker for women's equality in the film industry is really forgotten, both because of her great beauty and the tragedy of her untimely death. So this film, which is directed by Laurent Bozarou, who did a great documentary series that's on Netflix called Five Came Back, and one of Wood's daughters, Natasha Gregson-Wagner, who's also an actress, kind of explore the life and career of this very talented and influential performer. The doc has lots of film clips and archival interviews with Wood and recent interviews with family members and close friends. And it really just walks us through her career and her life. And it sort of details her successful acting career she was a child actress. And then it goes through some of her personal triumphs and tragedies. She had a lot of marriages and love affairs, largely with very famous men. She married Robert Wagner twice. And he's in this film interviewed by Natasha, and really goes into a lot of detail about their relationship as well as the night that Natalie Wood died and she fell out of this boat and drowned. And the film doesn't shy away from these weird conspiracy theories about her death either. They kind of go into it. And there's a lot of great interviews with people like Mia Farrow and George Hamilton and Robert Redford, who I didn't realize Natalie Wood discovered him on the stages of New York. And then George Segal and Elliot Gould and Richard Benjamin. And like I said, it just sort of goes through all the ups and downs of her career and right up to Brainstorm, which was sort of poised to be the beginning of this big comeback for her. And yeah, I mean, it's and what you really start to do, you know, and inevitably you start to sort of look for the places where maybe if someone doesn't look so good. And honestly, I mean, I realize this is a, you know, made by her, partially by her family, but you by the end of this, you're just like, wow, she honestly looked like a genuinely lovely person and a very generous person. And so this is a very loving and honest tribute to a talented actor and a, what apparently it turns out to be a lovely human being too.
Yeah. All right. It's on HBO then.
HBO and HBO Go. Yeah.
Okay. I will definitely watch that. So, okay, guys, hang on.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Eric and Steve are here and yeah, we're going to come back and talk more about movies and documentaries that you can stream from the comfort of your own home.
I was a little too tall, could've used a few pounds. Tight pants, points, hollering out. She was a black-haired beauty with big dark eyes and points all her own, sitting way up high. Way up firm and high. Out past the cornfields where the woods.
Right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we are here until 4. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke a little bit later on, and after 1, Jim Ryan, music and entertainment writer for Forbes.com, Daily Herald and Chicago Now, is going to join us. Always a lot of fun when Jim is here. Right now, Eric Childress and Steve Procopi are here. And we're talking about the new movie releases that are being streamed right now. And then we're going to talk about documentaries that you can watch while we're all stuck inside. Here is Eric. And
hello.
Here is Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hi there.
All right. Eric, tell us about Driveways.
Okay. This is a film that is getting a lot of attention right now because it co-stars Brian Dennehy, who we just recently passed away just a few weeks ago. But the star of the movie is Hong Chau, who's in Downsizing and most recently on HBO's Watchmen. She plays a single mother with a young child who goes back to her sister's house. Her sister has just passed away. In the effort to, you know, possibly sell the house, she has to take care of it and clean it, discovers that her sister was a hoarder, so it's a lot of work. The kid is kind of socially awkward. He's not very good in any sort of crowds, including one or two people. But he develops a little kinship with Brian Dennehy's character who lives next door, who's a veteran, he is a pretty nice guy that just goes about his day playing bingo at the VFW, and just, you know, forms a nice little friendship, with this kid. And, you know, that's pretty much the extent of the movie. And it's sort of the atypical sort of just nice movie that never really sort of gets beyond, at least for me, that just the sort of this general tone that it just never finds a sort of a greater conflict or something, you know, bigger that's going on in the story. And it kept reminding me of movies that I thought, you know, kind of did this material better. A film a few years ago with Bill Murray called St. Vincent has a very similar structure or dynamic between the characters. This one's sort of a nicer, less grumpy version of that story. And there was also a movie at Sundance this year called Minari with Steven Yeun about Korean family that moves to America in the early 1980s and tries to develop this life. And I thought, you know, this movie is just kind of, you know, kid finds special friend next door, and he's kind of nice, and they give Brian Dennehy a really nice monologue at the very end of the movie, and when I say very end, I mean literally the movie just kind of ends right after that, and I was kind of left going, okay. So it's not a bad film. It's a fine film. It's been getting, again, a lot of press right now because of Dennehy's passing. I always love seeing Dennehy in a nice guy role, and he's really terrific here. I just wish that there was a little bit more meat on the bone of this movie.
All right. Steve, what did you think?
I think this is a beautiful movie and a really fitting tribute to the range of Brian Dennehy. When we think of him, we usually think of him as being like, he's a great utilitarian player for sure, but he rarely got to do something this sort of gentle and moving, and he was sort of larger than life, but I don't remember a time when I've seen him really play this fragile and humble and full of regret about parts of his life. But I mean, I think some people might even cry at that monologue. That monologue might be the meat of this film. And yeah, I did think of St. Francis when, or no, what's it called?
Vincent. Vincent.
Yeah, yeah. When I saw this, but that movie was like out of its way, kind of quirky. And this movie is sort of stripping away all the quirkiness and just sort of settling in. And this film avoids a lot of cliches. And I mean, this is not a movie about like this little kid melting this old man's heart. The old man's pretty nice to begin with, so they're not really, the whole point is there's not really any villains here, and they're trying to say that, like, there are places in this country where there aren't villains. I know it's hard to remember that sometimes, but sometimes the neighbors are actually pretty neighborly. Even the sort of bullying kids next door are sort of put in their place pretty quickly.
The neighbor's a little racist, adjacent.
Oh, no, it is a little, and then it's also a little not. Like, it's a weird thing. But I'm just saying that, like, she's not outwardly, she seems very, like, the neighbor who's played by Christine Ebersole is she thinks she means well. Let's put it that way. I think that's how we politely put it. But anyway, I was genuinely moved by this. And the director is a guy named Andrew Ahn. This is his second film. The first one was one I saw at the, I think it was the Asian American Film Festival at the Siskel a few years ago called Spa Night. And this, I think this is a much better film. And like I said, a really nice tribute to Dennehy, who I think still has a few films in the can right now for whenever, but this film actually premiered at Tribeca last year, so this is a little bit older, but I'm really glad we're in an environment where something like this can actually get some attention. I think Michael Phillips gave it 4 stars the other day, so yeah, I like it a lot.
It's available on Prime Video. If you want to check it out, that's called Driveways. I love me some Brian Dennehy, man. All right, Steve, what is Spaceship Earth?
Spaceship Earth, as a kid growing up sort of obsessed with space travel and even the faintest possibility of humans living on the moon or Mars or wherever, I kind of have a vague recollection of this 2-year quarantine experiment that began in 1991 known as Biosphere 2, and it was named that because the Earth was considered Biosphere 1. I don't know. It's hippie stuff. Who knows? But in theory, this sort of live-in bio lab was meant to investigate the probability that humans could coexist in, like, these closed quarters while also doing dozens of experiments involving plant life and animal life, and the habitat had, like, a coral reef in one place and a desert environment and a rainforest and fields where they could grow crop and an array of animals to sort of simulate an Earth-like ecosystem with, like, a pinch of Noah's Ark thrown in. And, of course, the minute the door shut, the trouble began. And this documentary by a guy named Matt Wolf combines some archival footage and home movies from inside Biosphere 2 and new interviews with most of the people who went in, because they're mostly still alive, and a lot of them are actually still living together on, like, a farm or something. So, it kind of goes into the origins of the idea, which go back to the late 1960s, and this leader that sort of emerges named John Allen, who kind of seems to have a clear idea of the direction the group should go in, and they get this funding from this oil tycoon named Ed Bass, and the ecosystem is sort of a reaction to the Earth's environment going down the toilet, and it's sort of the next logical step in the evolution of space travel. So there's a lot of hoopla when they first go in, and almost as soon as they go in, the media starts going looking for holes in the ecosystem, as it were, and it turns out they're being very closed off and not very transparent, and they're actually cheating a little bit. They're pumping in oxygen when they're not supposed to be, and they're bringing in supplies secretly, and so it kind of gets into that, and weirdly enough, once the experiment's over, they all kind of get kicked out of the project, and Steve Bannon is brought in to take over. So, yes, that's Steve Bannon. Mm-hmm. So that's like a bizarre twist. I'm assuming you guys have some recollection of this thing, maybe. They had matching uniforms, and it's sort of vaguely science fiction-y, and Biodome 2 was kind of easy to laugh at when things start to fall apart, but this film is the story about those who weren't laughing and sort of making it a little bit heartbreaking as well as entertaining. So that's a modest recommendation for me.
Okay. Does Pauly Shore and Stephen Baldwin show up?
I can't believe that doesn't make its way into this, to be honest. I was sort of waiting for it. That was a little bit later.
Okay. All right. Steve, tell us about, what is this, 1BR?
One bedroom. Okay. This is a sort of a psychological horror thing. After leaving behind a painful past to follow her dream, this woman named Sarah, who's played by a really terrific actress named Nicole Bryden Bloom, she gets this sort of perfect Hollywood apartment, and she's hoping to become a costume designer. But something isn't quite right, and she's unable to sleep, and she's sort of tormented by these strange noises that she hears behind the walls, and she gets threatening notes about her cat that she sneaks into a no-pet building, and her new life sort of starts to unravel, and the neighbors seem very friendly, except when they seem weird, and I don't want to give away anything, but she kind of, when she starts to find out what the waking nightmare is going to become in her life, she kind of has to find the strength to hold on to her sanity and not get brainwashed or be trapped in this sort of existential hell. This is a really interesting film from David Marmer, who investigates sort of the pluses and minuses of a tight-knit community like an apartment complex. There are certainly times when it's truly unsettling, but the performances are really strong here, and it's something of a companion piece to The Invitation. You will definitely see parallels, although it's a very different story and certainly a very different outcome. But I think as sort of a old school Polanski psychological thriller, it really works.
Okay, that's called One Bedroom.
And you can get that through the Music Box Theater's website, the virtual theater thing.
Oh, okay. So check out musicbox.com. All right. Very, very cool. Okay. Let's do this. We'll break and we come back. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about documentaries because everybody is stuck inside. And we want to give, we've been given different genres every week of suggestions for people to watch. And we'll jump into the world of documentaries. So, guys, hang on. Eric and Steve are here, and we'll tell you all about some great documentaries that you can stream and watch at home. Right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio on a Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're talking with Steve Procopi and Eric Childress. And we try and pick a different genre since we're all stuck inside. There's a lot of stuff that you can watch on your TV. And basically, we're going to be telling you about some great documentaries that you can check out. And here is Eric. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And Steve. All right.
Hello.
Okay, let's start. Eric, go ahead and we'll start with you on Netflix, Fire, The Greatest Party That Never Happened.
Yeah, this is the documentary that was causing quite a stir about a year ago, I think. People might remember this Fire Festival, this big music festival that these guys wanted to put on, and they organized this enormous event. They were going to fly people to this island, and it was going to be the next new thing, and it turned out to be just the biggest disaster ever. The combination of just hubris and greed knowing a little bit about putting on an event, maybe not quite something as extravagant as that, but seeing how the people who were going to attend just got screwed out of this whole thing, it's infuriating. But if you only think you know the story from the news, this documentary shows you just how insane the behind the scenes story really was.
Okay, I remember this whole thing. And that's available on Netflix.
Yes.
Also on Netflix is Steve, American Factory.
It won the Oscar for Best Documentary this year. I mean, it's a tremendous and sort of hard to watch look at an American factory that makes glass, and how a Chinese company comes in and takes it over and try to mix the two labor forces, and it just doesn't happen. And it's a weird look at the American dream and how, you know, even these Chinese workers kind of love the idea of being able to come to America, but when they're put side by side with American workers, you know, it's tough. It doesn't quite work out for the company or the workers. This played at Sundance last year and got picked up by Netflix, and this is the first film that the president and First Lady Obama are producers on it, some degree, and their distribution company or production company kind of bought it and their names on it. So, it's a fantastic movie. Not quite the movie you think it's going to be when you kind of put Chinese up against American work ethics, or American versus any other country's work ethics, to be honest. So, and of course, they all get screwed by automation. So anyway, but it's an awesome movie. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Eric, also on Netflix, Amy.
Yeah. Documentary about the tragic rise and very quick fall of Amy Winehouse. And, you know, I was a fan of the, you know, her voice. I mean, it was a pretty incredible, unique talent. But this documentary, beyond the tragic tale of drugs and addiction that she went through, this is a documentary that really gave me a real appreciation for her music. And that's what I think a great music documentary, even though this is biography as well, a great music documentary will give you a real appreciation for the music, and I'm always looking out for documentaries such as that. I really adore this movie.
Yeah, me too. It's great. It's just great. Okay, and another music documentary from Netflix, 20 Feet from Stardom.
Also an Oscar winner from 2014. This is from director Morgan Neville, who did Won't You Be My Neighbor more recently. And this is about backups, background singers. And honestly, I mean, there's so many great voices and people, and often they're very unseen or uncredited, and this film kind of just pushes them to the front. And honestly, the whole film is worth it just for the whole sequence about the woman who sings the female voice on the Rolling Stones' Gimme Shelter, and how she was like 8 months pregnant or something when she did it. It's just such a fantastic sequence. And just like Neville's focused on human beings behind the voices, that's kind of his talent, and it makes it really special.
Okay. All right. So it's a terrific movie, too. I mean, really, I think it's terrific. Okay. Eric, documentary now?
Yeah, I would be remiss, since we're talking about documentaries, not to bring up the series that was on IFC, or is still on IFC, I guess, that Bill Hader and Fred Armisen and Seth Meyers produced. That is basically a parody of various documentaries that, a lot of the classic ones. I mean, it opens with a parody of Grey Gardens, for God's sake. This is still one of my favorite episodes of that entire series. And it's just, the first season is pretty much Hader and Armisen, playing most of these characters. They sort of gave way to a lot of other different guest stars for the second season. But they do one on Wild Wild Country, which is also the documentary series on Netflix that has Michael Keaton as the FBI agent and Owen Wilson as the guru that everyone follows. That is just hysterically funny. I love this show.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Okay, Five Came Back.
Yeah, I mentioned this earlier. This is the same director as the Natalie Wood documentary. This was a three-episode documentary series, an adaptation of the book by Mark Harris about these five filmmakers that were working before World War II, and they were each sort of given different assignments. They all went to war, were each sort of given different assignments during war. John Ford, William Wyler, John Huston, Frank Capra, and George Stevens. And each of the episodes is sort of has these newer directors like Spielberg and Guillermo del Toro talking about how influential these films were and what these men went through during the war. And some of them, like John Huston and John Ford, were just in the in the middle of everything, like just completely. So like for World War II buffs, it's an absolutely must see, but it's also really masterfully structured and just such insight. And there's footage I've just never seen of some of this stuff. And I remember when it came out, Netflix also put out a lot, made available a lot of the films these filmmakers made during the war. So, it's a terrific series, though.
Okay, Five came back. All right. Eric, Raiders, the story of the greatest fan film ever made.
Yeah, this is a film that actually played our Chicago Critics Film Festival some years ago. The people may have heard of the story of these kids who were such fans of Raiders of the Lost Ark that they decided to recreate the film using just their own props and themselves as all the actors and whatnot, and created, just scene by scene, shot by shot, the entire movie of Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it became a bit of a sensation. It was played, actually Steve can actually tell you a story about it being played at a little festival that he attended. But this movie takes you on this journey of the kids then as adults, and the rocky history in their past up to adulthood, and then all trying to get themselves together to film the one last scene that they need to complete their shot-by-shot masterpiece, which of course is the big plane sequence from Raiders of the Lost Ark. This documentary is so much fun, and it's amazing what these guys did.
Yeah, it's a terrific movie. It really is terrific. We're talking with Steve and Eric. Everybody's stuck at home, so we're giving you some documentary options to watch while you're at home. All right, how about The Unknown Known, also on Netflix?
This was Errol Morris's film about Donald Rumsfeld, and I realize that you don't want to give him more attention than he already thinks he deserves, but to be honest, the guy has an incredible life story, and Errol Morris does, to his credit, get to ask some of the tough questions of him about different wards he was a part of and different administrations he was a part of, and there are just times where he, especially recounting the Iraq War, that are just downright chilling. And as far as political documentaries go, this is a must-watch thing, but you also kind of get a feel for what a career politician is capable of, good or evil.
Yeah.
It's an amazing movie, and I just love Errol Morris, and I think it might be the last like truly great film that he made.
Yeah, Errol Morris, is when you see his name, it's good. That's pretty much it. All right, Eric Screwball.
Yeah, and we're missing baseball right now, but this is the story of the guy that was in charge of, I believe it was the Balco, I believe was the name of the company that was essentially supplying performance-enhancing drugs to players in the major league. Specifically, this movie documents, it's all a lot about this guy, but it details in quite some detail about his dealings with Alex Rodriguez. And so if you see Alex Rodriguez, whenever we see him again, doing playoff announcing, watch this documentary to get a little more perspective on exactly what this guy was involved with when he was, belting homers, left and right.
Okay. All right.
Isn't that also the movie that with the reenactments, they have children doing the reenactments?
Yeah.
For no reason.
Okay. All right. Next one is Euro Dreams of Sushi.
Oh, I think it's the best food documentary ever made. Even if you don't like sushi, you'll be salivating over this place. This place in Japan that's like a $500 a place plate restaurant, kind of hidden away in Japan. The chef's name is Hiro Ono, who is sort of in the process of turning over the business, or at least one of his restaurants, over to his son, and it's just captivating and beautiful, and you realize there's a philosophy behind sushi making, and there's such detail, or it's such a detail-oriented profession, right down to the kind of rice you buy and where you get it from and how long you cook it for and how you cook it. It's unbelievable. And so he kind of opens up the door to his place and his secrets, and it's a fascinating look at just Japanese culture in general. Especially right now, it just feels good to like see a restaurant that's like full. So anyway, It's a really fitting documentary, even if it'll leave you physically hungry by the end of it.
Oh, I was drooling. drooling during this movie. So, all right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll have more documentaries to throw at you and that you can watch while you're stuck at home with Eric and Steve coming back after this. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. It is a Monday morning, so my dad's going to call in and tell a joke later on. And we're going to be talking with Jim Ryan, music and entertainment writer for Forbes.com, Daily Herald, Chicago Now. Always a lot of fun when Jim is here. And we'll play a round of Rock of Ages, which is a fun music trivia game. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Talking with Eric Childress and Steve Procopi about documentaries that we are suggesting that you can check out. Here's Eric.
Hello.
And Steve.
Hello.
Okay. Let's, Eric, we'll move on to Hulu. Love, Gilda.
Yeah, a documentary about the career of Gilda Radner, who we lost, a lot of greats way too early. You know, we talked about Natalie Wood earlier. And this one, you know, this documentary about the sort of the everlasting impact of Gilda Radner and, you know, what she went through and the legacy that she left, and seeing people, contemporaries of hers now, reading bits from her, diary and things that she had written over the years. It's a real special look back at an incredibly talented woman.
Yeah, it's a wonderful movie. It is a wonderful movie. Okay, next one, Steve, Free Solo.
Did either of you guys ever get around to seeing this one?
No, I haven't.
Oh, man, this is, you know, I'm not afraid of heights, but I'm afraid of falling. And this movie is all about that. And I do prefer some of my adventures to be lived vicariously through someone. In this case, it's a guy named Alex Harnold, who is attempting his first ever, being the first person ever to climb El Capitan in Yosemite. It's 3,200 feet and without any ropes. And it's an incredibly dangerous feat, and the filmmaking by Jimmy Chin and his wife are just unbelievable, who are also both climbers. But you don't just, it's not just a document of the climb and all the 2 years of preparation that go into it. It really does get into why someone like this guy, who's a little bit of a robot, I'll admit, would risk his life to do something like this. And he has a fiance that we very much feel for in this movie. And, yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic film, but it will, and I, you know, played at the Music Box. So you see that those perilous heights in big, very big. And it made my stomach just turn several times over.
Yeah. I don't think I'd be able to, I don't think
it's
I'd
amazing.
Be able to do it. Yeah.
It's,
I mean,
so
I would
good.
Just, I would freak out. I would totally freak out, even from the comfort of my own home.
Yeah.
So, all right, real quick, here's Ike. Ike, go ahead.
Hey, Nick, how's it going with you, man?
All right, what's up?
Yeah, I have a good suggestion for a documentary. It's a perfect documentary to watch, especially people who are in quarantine, to help them stay in shape and everything. This one really opened my eyes. Super Size Me?
Super Size Me, yeah. The Morgan Spurlock documentary. That's right.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, that opened my eyes, man.
Okay. All right, Ike. Take care.
No problem.
Yeah, not a fan of that movie. the thing about that is that, you know, it's this expose about, you know, this guy, Morgan Spurlock, who would eat every meal at McDonald's. And whenever they asked you to supersize it, he would supersize it. And oddly enough, he got sick. But the weird thing is, that nobody, he didn't say this beforehand, he was a vegan before he did this stunt. So yeah, obviously it's going to make you sick, but if you're a vegan, it's going to be even worse. So, all right, Eric, active measures.
Yeah, there are a lot of crackpot partisan documentaries that you can find on both sides of the aisle. But this one that came out just this was last year, actually, really sort of peels back the Iron Curtain, if you will, of the legacy that Donald Trump has had with Russia over the years. This is a very thoroughly researched, very fact-based thing that, you know, takes you back to traces of, you know, Trump's connection with Russians over the years, particularly the Russian mafia, and it's a pretty eye-opening documentary. And you know, not that we need anything to make us more angry at the way things have gone the last 3 years, but this one, you know, people should take a look at, especially considering how Robert Mueller pretty much failed us. So,
on Hulu, Jane.
Yeah, this is a basic, I mean, a really great documentary of the early years of Jane Goodall. And, you know, there have been plenty of documentaries about her work with various chimpanzees and gorillas, but this is about her first time doing this, and just the mistakes she made and the things she did right and how it kind of inspired the rest of her career. And she worked with this cameraman who ended up being her husband. And it's a really interesting look at her today and certainly in her like just early 20s. And it's, I think it's a must watch for anyone who's sort of been fascinated by her story. And she also makes a very funny appearance in Spaceship Earth, actually, at the very end.
Okay.
when they emerge, she's there and to sort of greet them. And it's like, oh, wow, okay.
All right.
So, yeah.
Okay, let's do this a little quicker.
Yeah.
Eric, I'll give you a few titles here. You got Apollo 11.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful, it's a wonderful film.
Best of Enemies.
Yeah, Buckley versus the Doll.
Mm-hmm. And then Amazing Grace.
Two words, Aretha Franklin.
Yep. for you, Steve, you got the first Monday in May.
I put this on here because I think it's a fascinating document of something that would have happened this past Monday, like a week ago, the Met Gala, and the process that goes into, the year-long process that goes into putting that together. And it just got canceled. I mean, it got canceled this year. So
yeah,
for people who actually pay attention to that, and I am not one of them, but this is a fascinating document.
All right. Far From the Tree?
It's a strange little documentary about kids that do not end up like their parents, that are very different than their parents. And they could just be, you know, proteges, or they could be serial killers. And it kind of looks at, is there any similarity between those two? It's based on a very popular book, I really love this documentary.
Okay. Iris.
It's about, I'm trying to remember her last name now. Iris is like she's like a really famous sort of stylist and just a style maker. She's a very old lady and very popular. And I'm losing her. I forgot her last name now. But anyway, there's very few. Apfel, that's her name. And she's 98 right now, still alive, living in New York. And she basically became famous because of her eccentric style and taste. And she ended up sort of being the sort of fashion statement for the stars. So yeah.
Okay. All right. And then on Amazon Prime, my God, this movie, Dear Zachary.
I often cite this as my favorite documentary of all time. Kurt Kenny's document to try to, you know, give this child of his best friend a portrait of his father whose life was taken from him, and it's an amazing documentary about how life can basically almost sabotage the beauty that he was trying to put into this documentary. It's one of the most devastating things, but also one of the most beautiful films you'll ever see as well.
Yeah, you be prepared though, because this movie is devastating. Bill Cunningham, New York.
Yeah, he just died recently. He was the New York Times sort of fashion photographer that put together this back page. It was almost like an anthropological look at what people on the streets of New York, not like runway, but like what actual people would wear and their fashion similarities. And he was very influential. And there was another documentary about him that we just talked about a couple months ago. So yeah, you know, he's a terrific subject and very just an adorable human being.
Eric, Private Violence.
Yeah, this is originally an HBO documentary about different cases, caseworkers who work on domestic violence cases, and how some are successful and how many of them are not. Again, a very an important documentary, one that you know people should take a look at.
Okay, and let's see, Gimme Danger.
I mean, it's Jim Jarmusch doing a documentary about Iggy Pop and the Stooges. I don't think I have to say anything. And Iggy Pop's like shirtless for the whole his whole new interview and smoking. So yeah,
okay, there you
it's
go.
Amazing.
Nuts.
Yeah, the story of this this medical doctor in the 1920s and 30s who had the idea that you could implant goat testicles into the scrotums of human males to cure impotence. And it's done through animation. It's an incredible, hilarious story.
Okay.
From the director of Hail Satan, by the way.
That's right. Yeah. And Gleason?
Fantastic, just absolutely tear-jerking documentary about NFL safety Steve Gleason, who ended up getting ALS during his career, and just about his wife, and she gets pregnant right as he becomes basically completely disabled. It is an unbelievable story about this guy, his career as in football, and then as an activist for just basically wheelchair-bound people in general. Mm-hmm. So, just so moving.
Okay. Shut Up, Little Man.
Yeah, this is a story of these two guys that move into this apartment and hear that their neighbors are just always yelling at one another. One of them always saying, "Shut up, little man," to the other one. They began taping these conversations and distributing them to their friends. This film is sort of this kind of the spiritual sequel to Winnebago Man, in a way, and how sort of a weird true life thing, people who do not try to be celebrities end up becoming them because of people's fascination with their ridiculousness.
Yeah. Well, I love that movie. I Am Big Bird.
I mean, we just lost Carol Spinney recently, the original Big Bird. And this is a guy who not only was a fantastic actor and puppeteer, but he knew the importance of Big Bird to just millions of kids over many generations and just leaned into it and was so kind and so amazing. And you just become a kid again watching him do his thing and sort of getting a peek behind the curtain or the feathered curtain.
It's
yes.
It's a lovely movie. And then best worst movie, Eric.
Yeah, there's a film about the phenomenon around the cult sensation that is Troll 2, considered one of the worst movies of all time. But you know, it interviews members of the cast and the cult phenomenon that's grown out of it. But also, it's a reminder. It's a great documentary and a reminder that bad movies happen organically. You can't just make a bad movie for the sake of doing it and expect it to be a thing. It just has to happen out of the sheer passion of the filmmaker.
Right.
The reason The Room is what it is.
Okay. And then really quickly, Paradise Lost trilogy. That goes without saying. Those movies.
Yeah,
are...
Joe Berlinger and Bruce Sanofsky in the West Memphis 3 and this horrible murder that these kids got pinned on them, and just it just took so long to get them out and free, and it crushes you and inspires you all at once.
It's a great movie. Okay, guys, stay safe and we'll talk to you next week. Okay,
thanks.
Sounds good.
All right, there you go. There's Eric and Steve. They'll be back again next week.
Uptown got its hustlers, the Bowery got its bums, 42nd Street got Big Jim, a walker, he a bull shooting son of a gun. Yeah, he big and dumb as a man can come, but he's stronger than a country horse. And when the bad folks all get together at night, you know they all call Big Jim Ball just because. And they say you don't tug on Superman's cape, you don't speak.
Yeah. Man, you don't mess around with Jim. That's right. Yeah. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio. It's a Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke a little bit later on. We are obviously going to be talking more about Little Richard. And we've got our classic Johnny Carson. You can watch the Johnny Carson show every night on Antenna TV. And we always play classic clips, whether it be stand-up or interviews or sketches and things like that. We're going to have Don Rickles and Glenn Campbell as part of the classic Carson clip that we play. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Jim Ryan is our good friend. He is a music and entertainment writer for Forbes.com, Daily Herald, and Chicago Now. And you can follow him at Radio Jim Ryan. And let's get Jim on. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
I'm okay. How you holding up?
You know, hanging in there, all things considered.
Yeah. So you've been writing for Forbes.com, Daily Herald, Chicago Now for a long time now, right?
You got it. Yeah.
Yep. And now, obviously, you're not going to any shows because nobody is.
Unfortunately.
No, but you're still doing interviews and you're still writing and all that cool stuff.
Yeah, still finding a lane, right?
Mm-hmm. And so, what have you been? What have you been? And obviously, you're writing and things like that. You've been watching anything on TV?
I've been watching. I finally subscribed to Stars, and I've been watching a lot of movies. In fact, today, after about 2 weeks of having paid for Stars, they in their because of my viewing habits, they suggested that I watch Problem Child 2. So I don't know what that says about my viewing habits. I don't think it's good.
Not even the first one. They went right to the sequel.
They went straight to the sequel. They're like, you know what? We think we know you pretty well after these 2 weeks, and why don't you just go ahead and skip the first one?
That's pretty funny, considering how horrible that movie is.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. So Stars, huh?
I've got whatever I can do to be entertained at this point. I'm running out of options.
I've got Stars.
There's a lot of movies on there. I like it.
Not only that, but you know, if you can go back and watch, you know what I would suggest you watch?
What?
Ash versus Evil Dead.
Okay.
It's a series that my future ex-wife Dana DiLorenzo was on.
Yes.
And obviously Bruce Campbell, based on the Evil Dead movies. It's fantastically entertaining, and it's and I'm pretty sure it's archived on Stars. You can go to where they have their, you know, the archives and pick it out.
No, I believe you're correct. That's on there, and so is Boss with Kelsey Grammer, which I never watched when it was on.
That was right. They shot that here.
Was it good?
Oh yeah, it's very good.
Okay, I was gonna say I remember it, but I never watched it at the time.
No, it's very good. It's very, very, very good. So there you go, catching up on some stuff there.
Yes.
Yeah, all right. But you're still writing about the old music and the entertainment and all that fun stuff.
What's left of it? Yeah.
Right. So you recently, did you talk with Glenn Danzig?
I would like to talk with Glenn Danzig because, well, A, he's got this amazing film that's been out for a few months now. But he released an album last week. Are you familiar with this album that
I
last week?
I was not until I read your story.
He put out an album called Danzig Sings Elvis, and it's been in the works forever. I think you and I have even joked about it at some point over the last few years.
Yeah, well,
it came out last week.
For people who might not know, Glenn Danzig is basically, he's iconic like heavy metal singer.
Yes,
like punky heavy metal kind of singer with an iconic voice and an iconic build.
So it's
unusual that it's unusual that he's singing Elvis. How did this come to be?
This, I need to read more about it, but he's a singer of the Misfits, and you can kind of hear in some of his material over the years that there is that Elvis influence. I don't know that we needed a full album to encapsulate that. The single is always on my mind, and just Nick, take my word for it when I tell you it's not good.
Oh. Uh-oh.
Nothing on this album is terribly good. Maybe had he made it 30 years ago when he could still sing, we'd be having a different discussion. But at this point, I think if Danzig takes 5 steps, he's winded. And it's almost like you can hear that in the studio on this album.
Oh,
it's
no.
It's not what we'd call a strong body of work.
Does Danzig still tour?
Yeah, he's still doing those handful of Misfits shows. He was here at Allstate Arena about a year and a half ago, probably, and it was not good.
They played Allstate Arena?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Did they fill it?
So they were doing, as part of this Misfits reunion, they would do these one-off shows. Whoever put this tour together was smart enough to know they could not just do a full-on Misfits tour and sell out arenas, but they knew that if they did them every 3-4 months in big cities, they'd become destination shows. So they were doing arenas in the major markets, and here they did Allstate. They wouldn't even let media in to cover it.
No.
Because they knew what the reaction was going to be.
Did they sell out?
Yeah, it was sold out.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But the shows were not good.
The one I saw, it was okay. It was the original three members. It was Jerry only. It was Glenn Danzig. It was Doyle. And then they rounded out. It was Dave Lombardo from Slayer on drums. So, it was a strong band, and they had a supplementary guitarist up there. Everybody was pretty good except Glenn.
Mm. And what's happened?
He takes about five steps, and then he's winded.
What happened? Is he completely out of shape now?
Yeah, I think he's I think his caloric intake, exceeds now his musical acumen.
Well, that's an interesting way of putting it.
I try to not put too fine a point on it.
Is there a reason why did he explain why he put out an Elvis cover album?
It's been a thing of legend now for like years, and it should have stayed that way.
Mm. Okay, all right, but that's available now in case people want to.
The cover, I wish we had some audio because the cover of Always on My Mind is something. Okay. I sent Tom a link to it this morning and was just like,
maybe we'll play a little bit of that.
It's only a week old, so yeah. It's brand new.
So it's out there, man. All right, if you ever
people are still absorbing it.
Do you have a little bit of Always on My Mind, Tom, by Glenn Danzig? So is that what you sent it to Tom, right?
To Tom, yeah, this morning I sent him a link.
All right, link to
it's amazing.
To hear a little bit of Glenn Danzig singing Elvis.
A dozen Elvis covers and
a dozen Elvis covers by Glenn Danzig.
He slows them down.
All right.
He needs to slow them down, trust me.
Okay. I think we have Always on My Mind. Here we go.
As I should be. Maybe I didn't love you. Quite as often as I could. Little things I should have said and done. I'll just never.
Good Lord. Oh,
exactly.
Man. All right, Jim, hang on.
Yep.
Okay. Glenn Danzig sings Elvis. Oh. All right, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday morning and it's a jokey time. We're going to talk, obviously, we're going to talk more about Little Richard. Average gas prices are slowly creeping back up. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that. And products invented by moms. So there you go. Right now, Jim Ryan is with us. Jim is a music and entertainment writer for Forbes.com, Daily Herald, Chicago Now. Follow him at Radio Jim Ryan. Jim, we were just talking about Glenn Danzig singing.
Yes, we were.
And we just heard a little bit of him singing a little Elvis. And that was special.
14 songs on this album.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. So we were talking about the Misfit shows, and we've Tony is here on WGN. Hey, Tony.
Hey, how you doing?
All right. So you saw the Misfit shows?
Twice. I saw them 2016 at Riot Fest, and I thought they were amazing. I mean, wasn't like the sound wasn't that great because you're playing out in the middle of a park. But with the Allstate, it was more like contained or something. So it sounded better, at least to me. I thought they were amazing.
So what was it? What was the show like itself?
It was just like Glenn just like ripping through these. I mean, the whole band was like awesome. There was a secondary guitarist. Remember that? And like I said, it was just like. To me, it was just like, seeing the Ramones for the first time. I mean, like, the Misfits were broke up longer, than I've been alive. But, I mean, it was just, being able to see it, I guess. I mean, the whole, You know what I mean? The whole, like, everything I'd seen on the on YouTube beforehand, it was like, it was none compared to all that. You know what I mean?
Was the stage was the stage show crazier?
It was, I mean, it was, you know, the backdrop, if I remember right, they were just showing, like, all the little icons, like, you know, like the, you know, the skull and, like, Misfits. But, I mean, it was just, like, those guys just, and they were, like, all over the place. They weren't, like, you know, 60-year-old men or whatever they were. You know, it was, I don't know.
Dan Danzig was, like, a 60-year-old man.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, they're not hitting the high notes, like you know, like, Jim was saying, but I mean, but neither's like Robert Plant or any of those guys either, or Paul Stanley. I mean, but you know, it was still a hell of a stage show.
Okay, all right. So Tony, and it was, this was at the in Rosemont, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, all right, Tony. Thanks for the report, buddy.
All right, guys, have a good night.
All right, you too. There you go. Positive review for the Misfits.
Nostalgia is a powerful thing.
Yeah. You ever?
Well, there was no. There was no backdrop. They had two giant pumpkins on stage, and then the band. That was the stage set.
They had two giant.
They had no lighting.
Wait. They had two amazing. Giant pumpkins.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Real pumpkins.
Mm-hmm. No, because it was the same set they had on stage in Riot Fest in 2016 that they had here.
Oh, I see.
2.5 years later.
Okay. All right.
So they may have rotted by that point, but yeah, I mean it was fun in terms of, it was like seeing, it gave me a feeling of what seeing a show in 1975 must have felt like, because there was no production value whatsoever.
Yeah,
which is fine. You had barely any lighting. We were up top in the you know, the balcony at the Allstate Arena, and it was barely lit. We were like, this would be a great place to pull off crime and get away with it. I mean, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But to say that Danzig was in top shape would be misleading.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You know, it's funny. I saw the Ramones, like, the first time I ever saw the Ramones was like in '94.
Okay.
At the Riv. And I remember going and thinking, this is going to suck, you know, because at that time I'm like, they're old and half of them are dead. You know, it's like, so, and I went in with really low expectations, and I got to tell you, it was one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life.
They didn't make it too much longer past 94 either.
No,
right?
No. This was very late. I mean, but there's truly one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life. And I mean,
I love the Ramones. Oh. Man, I'm jealous of the fact that you saw the Ramones, because that's, I didn't get that chance.
And they literally sang 50 songs in a half an hour. I mean,
of
seriously, one,
did.
Two, three, four. And then it would just bust in. There was no stage talk, nothing. It was just.
Well, there were like four bands on the bill for this Misfits show, and I think we were still out of there in, you know, an hour and 45 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But no, seriously, one of the best shows I've ever seen. And, you know, I was like, these guys aren't going to be any good. And, man, I'm telling you, it was incredible. Absolutely incredible, and still one of my favorite shows that I've ever seen was the Ramones.
Well, I'm looking at this track list for the new Danzig Sings Elvis album, and there's 14 tracks on it, which, God bless him, you know, in an era where no one wants to buy music, he's chock full of 14 tracks. There's like no hits, really. Always On My Mind is the big hit. Otherwise,
really?
It's deeper Elvis cuts. We've got Is It So Strange, One Night, Lonely Blue Boy, First in Line, Baby Let's Play House, Love Me, Pocket Full of Rainbows. We're not talking here the big Elvis hits.
Well, Love Me. I love that song. But Love Me. I love that. I love that song. And it's,
you should listen to Danzig's version.
Yeah. Treat me yeah. What were you going to say, Tom?
I was just going to say we should get you to do a Elvis covers album.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. DiGilio does Elvis.
Hey, if Danzig can do it.
Yeah, well, literally, what's stop? If Glenn Danzig can turn around and just say, yeah, I'm going to do 14 Elvis songs and we're gonna sell that as a record.
Yeah.
What's stopping anybody?
That's true. That's true. I have never seen the Misfits. Tom, have you seen the Misfits?
I've not seen the Misfits, but I'm a big fan of the Misfits. One of my prized records I have is that I've got an original pressing of Collection One. That is, you know, just a bunch. I mean, it's just a bunch of stuff. They were never really an albums band. You know, they were just, it was punk and stuff.
No, they weren't.
Yeah, it was just you probably owned like a bunch of 45s or something like that, but I've got an original pressing of Collection One that has some of my favorite songs on it. And you know, it's just classic punk. It's just fun.
Yeah.
But no, I was on the fence. I thought about going to see Misfits at these shows, but Glenn Danzig kind of scares me. So
well, yeah.
I'm not sure if I wanted to see him in person.
Yeah, I don't know. He's not in great shape now, so he's not all buffed up.
He's not the chiseled physique you remember from the Mother 93 video.
Right. Okay.
Unfortunately.
All right. Glenn Danzig sings Elvis, if that's your thing. Deep cuts. All right. I don't know. You know, I mean, how long have the Misfits, when was their biggest popularity?
It was so brief. Like, in fairness, because I don't want to make it sound like I don't appreciate the Misfits here. I do appreciate their role in the history of punk rock. Theirs was like stunningly brief. It's like, Tom, correct me if I'm wrong. It's like something crazy, like 3 years, right? And there was barely anything in terms of a national tour during that point.
Yeah, no, it would basically right in the smack dab in the 80s.
Right, yeah, that's what I would remember.
Yeah, if you want to talk about the heyday of the Misfits, that was pretty much it for a few years. And then other bands just took over in the late 80s. But, you know, for that brief time that they were on fire, they were hot. They made the whole horror punk thing a look.
What was the band that he was in after that again?
That Danzig was in?
Yeah.
Well, he did Samhain.
Oh, right, Samhain. Yeah.
Which I think was that Doyle? Was Doyle from the Misfits with him on for that?
Yeah, I don't know. But I remember Samhain now, yeah.
And then, of course, he just did the band that he named after himself, Danzig, which
right.
Yesterday, Mother's Day, right? The anthem for Mother's Day, Nick. Mother.
Oh, God. Oh, that song. I had a friend who was a massive Glenn Danzig fan, like ridiculous.
And, solo Danzig.
All Danzig.
The whole body of work.
Everything. Everything. Geez, what's the name of that bar? The punk bar on North.
Delilah's?
Delilah. No, not Delilah's.
Oh, no. Oh, geez.
Why am I blanking?
Oh, I picture it. It's Fortified and Steel.
Yeah. Why am I blanking on the
oh
name
God.
Of this place?
I am, too. That's brutal.
My friend, who is the big Danzig fan, Exit.
Exit, oh, yes.
Yes, Exit. We would go to that bar. I was in a play called Among the Dead, and it was a zombie play, obviously, and I played like this lunatic zombie killer. And my friend Ryan, who's the big Danzig fan, used to insist that we go to Exit after every performance.
I like his style.
It was just ridiculous. And that play was the loudest. I mean, it was so loud in that place. And he would just go nuts.
We used to go to Exit after the Hideout. Every time we'd leave the Hideout, because you couldn't catch a cab, obviously, anywhere near the Hideout.
No.
You'd have to walk over to North Avenue. And then if you walk down to North Avenue, you're at the Exit, pretty much.
Right.
So it's like, well, we might as well go into Exit.
Yeah.
And I remember going in there one night and meeting a bunch of carnies. A bunch of carnies had stopped in there. They were attending. They were going to attend to a suburban carnival the next day, but they were in Exit at like quarter to four in the morning.
Of course, of course,
it was wonderful.
Of course, you know it's really
funny.
Those
are the types of things that happen at Exit.
What's really funny is my parents used to live right by railroad tracks, and every year the Ringling Brothers, because the Ringling Brothers and Barnum Bailey Circus, they actually did travel by train. They did live on the train.
Okay.
And it was, and they would park the train right by my parents' house. That's where they, so that they would do the shows. They would do the shows, but the train would stay there. And then my dad would say that sometimes you could walk into some businesses on Grand Avenue where they were, or you would be in a bar and all of a sudden a whole bunch of freaks would come in.
You know, the carnival had
yeah,
literally
exactly.
rolled into town.
Like the carnival words, it was like you were suddenly in a David Lynch movie. You're just having a beer, you're sitting at the bar having a beer, and suddenly all these weirdos come in. And this was annual. This was every year, every November, because that's when the circus would come to town. and they would park right by my parents' house and then hang out at the bars, awesome. Bearded ladies and all kinds of stuff. So crazy. All right, Jim, hang on.
Yes.
All right. Jim Ryan is with us, and if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. We have a lot more music stories to talk about, and we're going to play a round Rock of Ages. I get them confused. All right. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Right. Hi, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 4, as we are every weekday morning till 4. At 4 o'clock, we head over to the TV side of WGN and at Bradley Place, and we get some news and information for an hour from them. And then at 5 o'clock, the one and only Bob Surratt has your morning drive. And we are here at WGN 24/7. To keep you company, to keep you informed, and to get you through this. And we'll all get through this together. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Jim Ryan joins us monthly. Music and entertainment writer for Forbes.com, Daily Herald, Chicago Now. You can follow him on radio, Jim Ryan. Jim, we're here.
Likewise, Nick.
All right.
Pleasure to be here.
Oh, yes. Always a pleasure to have you. Okay, Trombone Shorty.
Oh, my God, I love him.
Tell us what's going on with him. He's doing something to benefit bartenders during this.
Yeah, he did it. He did it Friday night. He partnered with Crown Royal. They do Crown Royal does a weekly Friday night, beginning of the weekend whiskey toast called Generosity Hour. And for every post on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter hashtagging Generosity Hour, one word, they donate $1 to the Emergency Bartenders Fund that bartenders can apply. Because, as we know, musicians have been hit hard by the fact that they can't tour right now. That's the majority of their income. But bartenders were amongst the first, you know, to hit the sidelines as the shelter-in-place orders went into effect, as the retail shutdown kind of went into place. Yep. Bartenders were hit particularly hard, too. So they can apply. I think it's the USBG Emergency Fund, and bartenders can apply for grants through this. And Crown Royal's donating to the fund $1 up to $400,000 for every post hashtagging Generosity Hour, and Trombone Shorty performed Friday as part of that. So that was cool.
Oh, did you get to talk to him?
I did, yeah, and he's wonderful. He's such a good guy.
And what was it? What did you guys talk about?
Well, it was, in April, Ellis Marsalis, the legendary jazz pianist from New Orleans, the patriarch of the Marsalis family, so
yeah.
Father of Wynton and Branford, he passed away due to complications of COVID-19. So obviously there was a familiarity there between Trombone Shorty and Ellis Marsalis, which kind of upped the ante in terms of him needing to be involved in some way right now during this pandemic. And this is kind of the way that he chose to do it. He has a lot of friends and family members who are bartenders, so it was kind of a cause near and dear to his heart. Because you hear artists being name checked in terms of a group that's been hit hard by this, by lack of income, you know, that loss of the ability to tour. But I don't think you hear much in terms of the fact that bartenders have been hit particularly hard and will be amongst the last to return to work.
Yeah, but it's good for him to look out for those. You know, for the people in that industry, man. I mean, I bartended for some years and. You know, you earn money from the tips. That's how you get paid.
Yep.
And so it's nice that he's doing that. What else did you talk with him about?
We kind of spoke about just that history of jazz music in New Orleans, which is such an amazing thing. He has closed out the main stage at New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Fest since 2013. And that's, for musicians in New Orleans, that's an amazing honor to do that. It's been the Neville brothers for umpteen years who've done it, and since 2013 it's fallen to Trombone Shorty to close that main stage. So we talked about what kind of that honor means to him, and also we talked about the role of radio in terms of bringing people together amidst this pandemic in New Orleans. WWOZ, which is a nonprofit FM station in New Orleans, has been running old Jazz Fest appearances. And one of the ones they ran was a 1994 Neville Brothers appearance. And Trombone Shorty talked about how he's like, to me, this was school. Being able to sit down and listen to this on the radio and listen to the way they handled that set. He said he's trying to get in touch with them, and he's trying to get in touch with the Jazz Fest archives to get a copy of it so he can figure out ways to incorporate it into his own sets moving forward. So it was a pretty amazing thing.
Wow. Well, the Neville Brothers are just legends, man.
Yeah.
You know, especially in New Orleans.
Trombone Shorty said he started performing there in 90, 91, 92 at Jazz Fest, and he said he pretty much lived with Cyril Neville, kind of learning from him and just, you know, not making any money early on as a musician, pretty much lived with Cyril Neville, and, you know, they would bring him up to appear with them during those closing sets. So him now, since 2013, closing it himself and being able to bring them up on stage and return the favor, he was pretty excited about
that. That's pretty cool. That is really cool. Yeah, Trombone Shorty. Where do have anybody know where he got that name?
I don't know the essence of that name.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I like it.
I saw him open two summers ago in Tinley Park for Hall & Oates, and he was fantastic.
He opened for Hall & Oates?
It was him and Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. Yeah, a fantastic
wow.
bill.
Jeez.
Super cool, right?
Yeah, was that? Oh, I wonder if they were picked out, just hand-picked by Hall & Oates to open for him.
I think that's exactly what it was, yeah.
It's got to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Over at
it was one of one of Sharon Jones' last shows. She passed away from cancer shortly thereafter.
Yeah, jeez. And you got to see him at the war. What's that place called now?
The Hollywood Bank Amphitheater.
Okay, because I keep calling it the war. I always call it the world.
I think that's what everybody here calls it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've always called it the world, and it's gone through like 12 different names.
Yeah. The world, the new world.
Yeah.
The Tweeter Center.
The Tweeter Center. That's right. The Tweeter Center. Yeah. I can't believe it. I think the last time I was there, I think, was for a Dave show, if I'm not mistaken.
And he was there. He had not performed there in a long time, Dave, and came back. I think it was last summer. Maybe it was the summer of 2018.
It was last summer.
Okay.
It was last summer because I didn't go.
And he had some choice words for the venue, I've heard, through the grapevine.
Oh, really?
I've heard he had some choice words about how he did not miss performing there.
Yeah, well, I don't blame him. I don't blame him.
Yeah.
It's not a great venue, and the acoustics are terrible.
The sound is awful. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the Grateful Dead legendarily, well, I think they were banned from there, but they refused to ever go back there.
Yeah,
I played there, I think, one time.
Yeah, I mean, I've been there a few times. I've been there a bunch of times because, you know, sometimes you don't even have a choice. If you want to see
right
a certain band, you got to go out to Tinley to see them.
You know, I grew up in the South Suburbs in Crestwood, and I remember reading the Daily Southtown newspaper after the Grateful Dead performed there in probably the early 90s, mid-90s, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And in the police blotter, several deadheads had been arrested at a car wash for just standing in there naked, washing themselves. I remember just thinking to myself, oh, the Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
All right. Rock and roll.
Take off our clothes and get into the car wash.
Right.
Well, at least they're practicing some sort of hygiene.
Like, I picture, like, the scene in Footloose where they're washing the, Kevin Bacon's washing the yellow Volkswagen Beetle.
Right.
But it's just, you know, 15 or 20 naked deadheads washing one another.
God, that's ridiculous. I don't know why it doesn't surprise me, though.
Yeah. Nothing surprises me with them.
No, exactly.
I mean that in the best possible way.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's the Grateful Dead thing was not my scene, man.
Likewise.
Yeah, just not my scene.
But I appreciate it.
Oh, no. Hey, God bless them, you know. And, they, you know, everybody deserves to, you know, enjoy something that they a lifestyle that they like, you know. It's just not my mm-hmm. deal. I went to see, I think I told you this before, a buddy of mine got me tickets to see Sting open for the Grateful Dead. Because
that sounds like a root canal to me.
And I happen to love Sting, so as you know,
I know you do.
So my buddy and I is also a huge Sting fan. So we go, it's at Soldier Field. Okay. So Sting does his set. He played like a full. He played over an hour, which I was happy about. And then I'd never been to a Grateful Dead show before. It's just not my thing. We figured, okay, we'll just stay, you know, see what's going on. We lasted a song and a half. We lasted a song and a half. So, we're like, let's get the hell out of here now.
The last time Fish was at Wrigley Field, a friend of mine had two tickets. He worked at Murphy's Bleachers and had two tickets. And he's like, do you want to go see Fish? And I was like, no. he's like, it's free. And I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
And he goes, and I'm like, I already have a show that night. It was Stephen Marley, Bob Marley's, you know,
oh,
son
sure.
was going to be at Park West. And I was like, I already have tickets to this. He goes, well, can I go with you to that? I'm like, yeah, you can. Come on. And he goes, wait, why don't we go see? He goes, let's walk in. Let's watch 15 minutes of Fish. And then we'll go to Park West. I'm like, okay. I'm like, all right, I can do that. So we walk into, first of all, the atmosphere around Wrigley Field was unlike anything I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
The concert atmosphere there is always crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
The fish thing was on a whole another level.
Yeah.
And we walk in, and I think we caught about 90 seconds before they went on a 45-minute intermission. And we were like, okay. Great.
That's so fantastic.
I've technically seen Fish for about 90 seconds.
I see. Yeah, I've never seen them, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I'm totally fine with that.
Likewise, 90 seconds was all I needed.
All right, so is it possible for people to contribute to the Trombone Shorty thing? Is there like a website
or
anything?
Yeah, it was the USB... Oh, geez. Yeah, the USBG Bartender Emergency Assistance Program.
Okay.
It's at usbgfoundation.org, and you can contribute there. And there's also information for bartenders at this website who want to apply for a grant, philanthropic grant.
Okay, cool.
You don't need to be a member of it. You can just apply for the grant there, and that's at usbgfoundation.org.
There you go. Shout out to the bartenders out there. Okay. Hang on, Jim.
Will do.
All right, Jim Ryan is with us, and we got more music stuff to talk about, and we're going to play a round of Rock of Ages, too, a fun trivia game here on 720 WGN. DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday and it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. Jim Ryan joins us monthly. He's a music and entertainment writer for Forbes.com, Daily Herald in Chicago Now. Follow him at Radio Jim Ryan. And we always talk music and more. And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about Shinedown.
Yes.
Shinedown is raising $250,000 for direct relief via a new T-shirt and song bundle. Let's hear about that.
Direct Relief is a non-for-profit that's been around, I think, since 1936. And their entire goal is to, at least right now, is to fortify your frontline responders with the PPE, the personal protective equipment, to make sure they can do their jobs in as safe a manner as possible in America and around the world. It's a worldwide thing. It's not just here.
Yeah.
So Shinedown, who, not one of my personal favorites in the hard rock realm, did a thing where they're doing an amazing project, which is they've put out a single and a T-shirt bundle, and all of the proceeds, minus the cost of getting the T-shirt manufactured, are going to Direct Relief. And so far they've raised $250,000, which is amazing at this point, right?
Yeah, that's pretty great. That's pretty great. And this goes right to Direct Relief?
Yeah, it goes directly to them. And So it was the bundle costs. They're charging. They're getting $50 for the bundle, which is amazing in this day and age for a song and a T-shirt. Cost them $5 to get the T-shirts made. The other $45 goes straight to direct release. So it's kind of an amazing thing. I caught them open for Van Halen in 04 at United Center. The tour where Sammy Hagar was back in the fold and Eddie was a train wreck.
Oh, he was.
But Shinedown was the opener that night. And wow, they're doing a cool thing for direct relief, yeah.
So that's cool. That's $250,000, man. That's great.
That's an amazing thing, right? I keep trying to find these stories where everybody's writing about the fact that Lady Gaga is raising a ton of money, which is amazing. Good for her. But I keep trying to find these stories that are maybe fly slightly under the radar because
sure.
I think there's some of these bands that don't have quite that national stature at this point that are raising significant money. And I hope it's standing as an example to all of these different artists out there that you can make a significant difference. And if everybody was doing that, I think it'd be a great thing.
Where are Shinedown from?
Florida, Gainesville, Florida.
They're from Gainesville, huh?
Mm-hmm.
How long have they been around?
Since the lead singer is who I spoke to, Brent Smith, and I think he came out of the late 90s thing. Shinedown was a direct result of his failed first attempt. And I think like 03, I think we're talking since their first album. I caught them in Bridgeview. They headlined the open air festival 2 years ago at Toyota Park. So they've been around, probably close to 20 years, which is crazy.
Wow, really? Has it been that long?
Yeah. Jeez. So now that I think about it, that Van Halen gig, that was pretty early on for them.
Yeah. So Van Halen with Hagar, huh?
See, I'm in the minority here, and I know it. I love Sammy Hagar. That's the Van Halen that I gravitate to.
Uh-oh.
I know we're going to fight on this one, yeah.
Are you all right, man?
I'm one of the five people, yes, who love the Hagar.
Oh, man.
The Van Hagar.
Yeah, no.
That's what I grew up with, though, Nick.
Yeah, all right, I guess. But you prefer that over Roth?
I came to appreciate Roth. I like them both probably equally at this point. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the entire Van Halen catalog. But as a kid, I mean, you know, like... I was born in 79, so by the time For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge came out in 91, that was my jam, right?
Yeah.
You know, right now is on Crystal Pepsi commercials. Come on, how can you go wrong?
I got to tell you, man, I vividly remember when the first Van Halen album came out.
Okay.
Because there was nothing like it. Like, nobody played guitar like that. It was really, I mean, I remember how revolutionary it felt when that first Van Halen record came out. I mean, nothing sounded like that.
How big is the role? Because I need to read more about this, but I know he claims, anyway, to have a role in this. How big is the role of Gene Simmons in supposedly exposing Van Halen to a wider audience? Because he claims that, right?
Yeah, he does claim. Now, he claims a lot of things.
Yeah, yes, he does.
Gene Simmons. So you always have to, you know, take it with a grain of salt if it's coming out of Gene Simmons' mouth.
When he's not putting his name on a condom or a casket, he's claiming many things.
Yes, 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 yes. But I will say this. Yeah, he is partially responsible for giving them the exposure that they need.
Yeah, and he kind of claims to have discovered them, right? Is that
I don't know if he actually discovered them, but he did push them. You know, at a time when nobody knew who the hell they were. But yeah, I just, the first Van Halen record, man, I remember everybody had it, you know, and it sounded like nothing, and it was like revolutionary. You know, and David Lee Roth, like one of the greatest frontmen ever at that time.
Right. At that time. Yeah.
Yeah. At that time. I mean, my God. I listened to that record nonstop when it first came out, when the first Van Halen record came out, and it's got my favorite. It's got my favorite Van Halen song of all time, which is Atomic Punk.
Okay.
Which I think is the biggest jam they've ever done. I love that song. Did you ever get to see them with Roth?
I did when they came back around in 2013. I saw them at Allstate, and I saw them at United Center. Do you remember, fun fact, who the opener was on that tour?
I do not.
Handpicked by David Lee Roth, because, of course, when I tell you who it was, of course it was handpicked by David Lee Roth. Cool in the Gang.
Oh, right. I totally forgot. Yeah, yeah. Now I remember now. Cool and the Gang opening up for Van Halen.
Yes.
Oh, David Lee Roth. I saw David Lee Roth solo at the House of Blues, and it was horrendous.
Oh, I kid, yeah.
It was horrendous. Jeez. And luckily, we got in for free. I had a connection at the House of Blues. So we had
you don't want to pay for that.
We had a box and everything, so we were just like up in the box. And oh man, was it bad. I will say this, his band was great. He just basically
when he had Steve Vai or
no, this was after that.
Okay.
Yeah, no, this was like in I want to say mid-2000s.
Okay. Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah, like mid-2000s or 2006, 2007, something like that. And the band was great. They were it just seemed to me like they were like these 20 somethings who grew up on Van Halen. You know, and I wouldn't be surprised if they were a Van Halen tribute band. and
that's pretty much what Dave is at this point.
Oh yeah, but they were great. The band was really great. They were young, and they were and they knew the songs. They played really, really well. But man, was he! And he was trying to do the splits and the kicking and and all that stuff that he was able to do. And he had like four costume changes, you know, and just head to toe leather.
I've told you this before. When they first came back, when he first got back in the fold with Van Halen in like 2013 or whatever that was.
Yeah.
The highlight of that to me was the first public performance, which was they went on Kimmel, and before they even got into, I think it was Panama, Dave nailed himself in the face with his nunchucks.
Oh, that's right.
And had to get stitches, and then performed on stage during the actual part of the performance they aired with stitches in his face because he had already nailed himself in the face with nunchucks, which is that's Diamond Dave in a nutshell.
Oh, that's it, man. That's it. I love the fact that it happened on Kimmel's show. For some reason, it seems appropriate that it happened on Jimmy Kimmel's show. But yeah, no, David Lee Roth. I mean, we went. My buddy and I went because it was free, and my buddy lived at that time. He lived in Marina Tower, so we were right there. So we figured, well, let's just have some booze in your apartment, and we'll take the elevator downstairs and just go see David Lee Roth.
I was so excited to see him this summer because he had been the opening act on the Kiss, the quote unquote farewell tour.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we believe that Kiss is going away, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Dave was opening, and those showed some of the video. Oh man, was astoundingly bad. Well, so I was really excited.
Well, we played. What was it? Dance the Night Away, Tom.
Yes.
Played audio of Dance the Night Away of David Lee Roth in his most recent tour, and it was horrific. It was just terrible.
So I was excited. This is the reasons I get up in the morning.
Yeah. Well, there it is. Right there, David Lee Roth, man. Tom, you ever see David Lee Roth?
Thankfully, no.
Yeah,
because I appreciate Van Halen. I'm not a big Van Halen guy.
Yeah,
so it's just one of those things where I'm watching David Lee Roth kind of embarrass himself. I'm like, oh, yeah, this seems about par for the course.
Well, but back in the day, they were great. In the late '70s, they were unbelievable. They were unbelievable live, and but that has definitely changed. So.
The trajectory of Eddie as a guitarist is amazing because he goes from lauded to, people are so annoyed that he's playing the keyboards by the late 80s,
yeah,
early 90s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I still think, like, to the fact that he's almost kind of like an afterthought now. But when I listen to some of his solos, even today, they hold up, man.
Oh, no. He's
unique. He's original.
With no question about it. He was absolutely amazing.
Any kid that learned to play the guitar was definitely like, hey, guys, I could do like... a little bit of Eruption.
Yeah, a little bit. Okay, Jim, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Jim Ryan is with us, and we're talking music and more. Check out Radio Jim Ryan for more. Yeah, man. Well, my friends, the time is come. Little Lionel Richie. Uh, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday and it's a jokey time. We got more. Going to talk a little bit more about Little Richard. And we've got products invented by moms. Yesterday was Mother's Day. Hope everybody had a nice weekend and a nice Mother's Day. 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you if you want to jump in here. Jim Ryan is our guest, a music and entertainment writer for Forbes.com, Daily Herald, Chicago Now. And we've got more music stuff we're going to talk about, and we're going to play a round of Rock of Ages, which is a fun music trivia game that we always play when Jim is on the show. Hi, Jim.
Hello, Nick.
Hey. All right. So, you know, you're not going to shows because nobody is.
Right.
And you're keeping busy by subscribing to Stars.
Problem Child 2, yes.
Problem Child 2. I still love that they suggested you watch Problem Child 2.
I'm like, what if I watched Carlito's Way. I'm trying to think of some of the other movies I watched on Stars. I'm like, what in your algorithm said to you,
yeah,
this is the guy for Problem Child 2?
Hey, you know, when I think Carlito's Way, I immediately think Problem Child 2.
John Ritter, it's obvious. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Oh, Ritter. You know, I remember seeing Problem Child. I've seen the first Problem Child and shocked at how much money it made. Shocked.
There were how many of them?
There's four.
Oh, my God.
Tom, are there four
amazing
Problem Child movies? I know there are at least three. I know there's at least three. And, I'm wondering why they specifically chose the second one for you.
Yeah, that's my favorite part of that whole thing. Yeah. Like, why don't you cruise past the first one? And, in the second one, Junior gets a playmate. We think you should go straight to that one.
Yeah, go. There were three Problem Child movies we just confirmed. Three.
Perfect. Thank God.
Is Ritter in all three of them?
He's definitely in the first two. I know he's in the first two.
I can't remember whether he's in the third one or not. But he's not in the third one.
Who else is in the first one? Is it Jack Warden? Is he in the first one?
Jack Warden?
Who else is in the first one?
Well, his Ritter's wife, I believe. Jack Warden is in it? Who else is in it? Tom, what are we looking at? Cass, is Amy Yazbeck in it? Because Amy Yazbeck was John Ritter's widow. And I thought she was in that one. I thought she was in Problem Child.
Yeah, she is. Amy Yazbeck. So here it is.
Oh, yeah.
Michael Oliver is Junior, John Ritter, Jack Warden, Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, my God.
Michael Richards.
Gilbert, yes.
Michael Richards is in Problem Child?
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Amy Yazbeck. Yeah.
Wow. Jack Warden. What, did he lose a bet? Jack Warden. Well, Jack Warden did a lot of movies. He made a lot of movies.
I'm curious what else the redheaded child from Problem Child has done.
I can't even.
He's 38. I'm looking at his Wikipedia page right now.
He's 38. Yeah, that makes sense. That movie was a long time ago.
It says here after completion of Problem Child 2, there was a lawsuit. Universal Pictures sued his manager mother for extorting his acting contract with the studio.
Oh.
Allegedly.
So is he not in the third one? Is it a different Problem Child?
This is all new to me. I don't know. By the way, this is going to shock you, Nick. It doesn't look like he had a huge film career following that lawsuit. It looks like he did. He's not in the third one, from what I can tell. He did three movies ever. Nothing after 1995.
Oh, boy.
And Problem Child 3 was straight to TV. It was a TV movie.
It was a TV movie?
Yeah, it was on NBC, premiered on May 13th, 1995. So we'll have to celebrate that anniversary in a couple
May
days.
May 13th, 1995?
Yeah, Problem Child 3.
Who was in it?
Let's see. William,
I love this.
William Catt.
William Catt? From Carrie? Greatest American Hero,
yes,
William Catt?
Yes, William Catt.
Who else?
Justin Chapman.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah. Sherman Howard.
Star-studded.
Yeah, Sherman Howard, a.k.a. Bub.
Oh, Howard Sherman. Right?
Yeah. Well, this is weird. On Wikipedia, he's referred to as Sherman Howard.
His name is Howard Sherman.
Yeah. Yeah. Howard Sherman. Yeah.
Do you know who Howard Sherman is, Jim?
I do not.
He's the greatest. He played the greatest zombie in movie history, Bub from Day of the Dead.
Okay.
But he's also the guy who has the Junior Mint dropped into his stomach in Seinfeld.
Seinfeld.
Yeah. So that's the same. That's the same guy. He's in Problem Child 3. Oh, poor Bub.
That's awesome. I'm so glad I was able to send us down a Problem Child rabbit hole here.
There you go, Problem Child. I don't know why I'm thinking, you know, in addition to Problem Child movies now, you know what's going through my head right now? Those damn talking baby movies with Kirstie Alley and...
Look Who's Talking.
Oh, man.
No, it wasn't that... Well, yeah, that was Look Who's Talking. Yeah.
Look Who's Talking. Look Who's Talking now. And then wasn't there a third one?
Travolta?
Yeah, it's Travolta and Kirstie Alley. But then Bruce Willis was the voice of the baby. But then they did one. Didn't they do one with multiple babies? And one of them was like Roseanne. And then they had like talking dogs or something in it.
I love that. God,
those movies.
This is the type of thing I can get back to you on though. You give me about 24 hours worth of stars.
Yeah, it was Look Who's Talking. Look Who's Talking 2, T-O-O.
Yeah.
And Look Who's Talking Now with the dogs. And the dogs are voiced by Danny DeVito and Diane Keaton.
Diane Keaton.
Wow.
I hope that check cleared, Diane.
Yeah.
Wow. So this is Star showing those movies?
I'm going to check. I hope. I definitely watched... this could... Unlike Carlito's Way, this could explain why I got the Problem Child 2 recommendation.
Okay.
I did watch Crocodile Dundee and Crocodile Dundee 2.
Oh, no.
Back to back.
Oh, man. This pandemic is getting a little crazy for you. And Falling Down?
Desperation's kicking in. Yes, I must be entertained.
I like Falling Down.
I do, too. You know, and I'm not a Joel Schumacher guy. But
no, neither am I, but I like that movie. I do. I like that movie, and I think Michael Douglas is great in it.
He is.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Tori Amos, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You got to talk to her.
I love her.
Yeah. She's awesome. So we'll talk about Tori Amos coming up right here on 720 WGN. Said it before and I'll say it again. Cannot go wrong with Earth, Wind, and Fire, ever. Hey, coming up in a few minutes, our classic Carson. You know, Johnny Carson show, you can watch it every night on Antenna TV, and we play clips from the Johnny Carson classics. We've got Don Rickles and Glenn Campbell audio from those guys coming up in just a little bit. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Jim Ryan is with us. He joins us once a month. He's a music and entertainment writer for Forbes.com, Daily Herald, and Chicago Now. All right, Jim, hi.
Hi, Nick. Howdy.
Hey. So, Tori Amos, she's got a memoir, a new memoir, correct?
Her second book, yeah. It's the first one had a ghostwriter. This one is 100% her, and it's quite great.
Is it?
Resistance.
It's called Resistance.
The name of the book.
Okay. And you got to speak to her.
Yeah, that was a thrill. I grew up as a big fan of her. I think back to like the music landscape in the early 90s when she kind of emerged. And it really was no piano pop. You had Elton John and Billy Joel, and in the alternative realm, there was really nothing.
Yeah.
She predated Ben Folds 5 and kind of opened the door, I think, for almost a whole genre that exploded after her. She, you know, there was nothing cool about the piano at that point, but she made it, you know, cool.
She did, yeah.
I think her role in alternative music cannot be understated.
I agree. I totally agree. And watching her play is amazing. Just like her performances are so great. To watch her play the piano, it's awesome.
Well, she talks in the book about the fact that she was pretty much, I mean, she started playing, I think, at 3 or 4 years old and did the music school thing, was kicked out of music school because she was putting too much of her own spin on the, you know, the classical canon. But the object growing up was to be a concert pianist. It was not to be a pop star.
Right.
And so it's interesting. I mean, like you say, when you watch her perform, I mean, you get that idea that she's you know, just an incredibly talented player in addition to great songwriter and singer.
Yeah. Now, how did that change? She was going to be a concert pianist. When did that begin to alter?
So I didn't know that. Somehow this totally escaped me until reading the book. Before her first album, Little Earthquakes, in I think that was 92, she had an album out on a major label called Why Can't Tori Read? And it was a synth pop band. Did you know of this?
No.
She had a major label release synth pop album with a group, and it totally failed spectacularly. And by virtue of the fact that it failed so spectacularly, they tore everything down and started from scratch and, you know, went back to kind of the building blocks, I suppose, so to speak. But that's why we got an album like Little Earthquakes, is because that was not the plan.
The plan was
synth pop, and it failed.
Wow. Have you heard it?
No, but I have not.
I would really like to hear it. Why Can't Tori Read?
Mm-hmm.
That's the name of the band.
The letter Y, and then K-A-N-T, Tori Read. Yeah.
Wow.
A synth pop album.
That's crazy. So I can't even imagine.
She talks about how thankful. Yeah, she talks about how thankful she is that it failed.
Jeez. Okay. All right. I didn't know that. That was it. And so what's the book? What was it like to talk to her about the book?
She's got some amazing stories, obviously. And the book gets really political. She talks about kind of how we got to where we are and, you know, what could be at stake here moving forward. She writes a lot about 9/11. She was, if you'll recall, Letterman's first musical guest following the 9/11 attack. She covered Leonard Cohen.
Yeah.
And she was in London, I think, at the time of the attacks and had just come into New York to perform. And then obviously everything was immediately put on hold, as everything was in the world at that point. So she was living in Florida at the time. So her and her crew on the tour bus drove from New York to Florida, got back to Florida, and got the word within 2 days that they were going to resume Letterman tapings. So they drove back to New York, and she talks about how that road trip at that point, driving through the North, driving through the South, that she experienced just this collective. There was no North South. Today we have that whole, there is that division. And she says after 9/11, there was none of that, you know, traveling and stopping in diners in North Carolina or wherever. There was, you know, it was just a collective outpouring of support for one another. And there was a lot of moments in the book where it's feels kind of prescient, eerily so, in terms of where we're at today. She writes at one point that collective trauma is its own energy. And all of this stuff was written prior to the pandemic.
Yeah.
But certainly that's an idea you could apply to where we are today. Collective trauma is its own energy. So it's a political book, but it also kind of, in strange ways, speaks to where we are today.
And
it's pretty fascinating.
Called Resistance. Has she got any new music coming out?
So that was in the book. She writes that the goal was to have an album out in the run-up to the election prior to November this year. And so I asked her, I said, you know, is that still the plan? And she said, no, this whole thing's made her rethink it now, and she wants to figure out where people are. And she spoke about how, you know, going on tour after 9/11 gave her the opportunity to kind of take people's temperature throughout the country, figure out how people were feeling, what they needed, what they were looking for music, what the role was. And just, she called it, you know, grief that she doesn't have that ability to do that right now. I mean, here we are 2 months with all these venues dark throughout the country. It's a strange time. But no, she wants to take the next 3 or 4 weeks. She's doing online book signings, and people are able to log in and ask her questions there. And she wants to take advantage of those experiences to try to take people's temperature and figure out what the next move should be.
Yeah. Well, it's uncertain what's going on anywhere now.
Right.
And I remember when after 9/11, nobody knew what to do.
Right.
We didn't know if we were going to have entertainment anymore. We didn't know if we could be funny. You know what I mean? And it was just so strange. And it's very similar to what we got going on right now. And some people are stepping up, though, you know, and which is good.
For sure.
Which is really
I remember after 9/11 going to the first concert back. I think it was I'd have to look up the date. I think it was the first concert back, and it was at the Vic, mm-hmm. and it was David Byrne.
Oh yeah.
And when he did Life During Wartime that night, amidst that particular climate, you know, yeah. prior to our response of war, but following the attacks, it was quite surreal.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. And that's a great show to see David Byrne for a show back, because he's just so great.
He's amazing. Yeah, he's another one who's I think he's doing an online series, I think I read. So he's trying to put his unique stamp upon these weird times we're in.
Yeah. I got to say, and I've said this before, his most recent appearance on SNL was one of the best musical performances I've ever seen on that show, ever.
That tour, that American Utopia tour, is one of the greatest shows I've ever seen. He went out of his way in the run-up to those dates about 2 years ago to try to connect it to Stop Making Sense,
mm-hmm.
which, here's a guy who never looks back, right? He never, ever wants you to connect what
right,
he's doing now
right,
to what, what's come before him. So the fact that he was going out of his way to connect that show to Stop Making Sense, and then it actually, the fact that it held up, that it was so good, it was like, oh my God, David Byrne, yeah, he's a visionary.
Yeah, there's no question about it. You know, I just remember sitting on my couch watching SNL live and just being completely blown away by both performances, both musical performances that he gave that night. And one of the best musical performances I've ever seen in SNL. I mean, truly.
Did that wind up being one of the last actual in-studio musical guests?
I think so. It was pretty close after that, yeah. Have you watched either of you watched the stay-at-home SNLs?
I watched the first one.
Yeah. Some of it works, some of it doesn't, but, you know, given the situation, you know, it's...
I'd rather have SNL than not have it. I watched the Tom Hanks one.
Yeah, Tom Hanks showing up was great. This one was hosted by Kristen Wiig was the host.
Okay, so she's wonderful.
Yeah, she's fantastic, and there was some really funny stuff, and I love the stuff with Pete Davidson because he's in quarantine with his mom.
he's preparing for the future.
It's so funny. it's interesting to see, you know, how they're doing these stay at home things. Like I'm really fascinated by watching, you know, the late night guys.
Yeah, that's, I mean, like some people are figuring this out and some are not, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Some people are doing great. It's great. It's just unprecedented and weird, but it's
it's
all right. And so the book is called Resistance. It's out right now.
It is.
And you highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's a great read. It combines kind of her song lyrics and then her prose to drive the narrative of this tale that looks back at her career but also kind of looks at the last, you know, 4 years and how we got here. It's an interesting tale.
Okay. That's Tori Amos, and she's got her new memoir. It's called Resistance, and mm-hmm. it's out there now. Your interview with her is at Forbes, right?
Correct. Yeah, it's on Forbes, and I've got it on my Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan.
What are you laughing at, Tom?
847 says, I'm a huge Tori Amos fan. However, Why Can't Tori Read ranks slightly just ahead of Glenn Danzig Sings Elvis. So there you go.
Okay, so that band, not so good. Okay. You know, now I'm really tempted to just go online and try to find it.
Oh, yeah, I got to hear it now.
It's there. It's on YouTube.
Oh, it is. It's on YouTube.
It's the whole thing.
Okay. Well, there you go. There's something to look forward to after you get off the air with us, Jim.
Yes.
Watching some synth pop Tori Amos online.
Doesn't get better than that.
Yep. Well, so what are you working on now, Jim?
I had Jimmy Webb on the phone for Ooh. An hour and 5 minutes earlier in the week. That was
one of the
insane.
Great, one of the greatest songwriters that's ever lived.
Speaking of Glenn Campbell, right? Yeah,
yep.
For sure.
Yep, absolutely. Oh, man. That must have been really great.
He went in depth on writing Wichita Lineman, and I think spoke for probably about 20 minutes of the hour five just on writing Wichita Lineman. Oh. It was, once he got started, he would just go, and I'm like, well, I'm not interrupting.
No.
And at the end of the conversation, he goes, I'm sorry, I kind of have a habit of meandering, and I'm like, quite all right.
Yeah, you're Jimmy Webb. Say whatever you want to say.
You want to tell me about Wichita Lineman for 25 minutes? Fine.
I totally
have a captive audience.
Absolutely. All right, Jim, hold on, okay?
Sure.
All right, we're going to play a little comedy here. We're going to break, play a little comedy.
from the Carson Show, and then we're going to come back and we'll play a game of Rock of Ages, which is a music trivia game. We'll play that with Jim after we break here and come back with some classic Carson featuring Don Rickles and Glenn Campbell right here on 720 WGN. Good morning, everyone. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are here for you 24/7. You can call us at 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you. And Jim Ryan, we'll get back to the conversation, play a little Rock of Ages trivia. That's all coming up. But right around this time, every weekday morning, we like to play some comedy from the Johnny Carson Show. You can watch the Johnny Carson Show every night on Antenna TV. And so we like to play some stand-up, some sketches, whatever, interviews, things like that. So we've got some classic Carson and clips here that we're going to play. And this morning we feature Don Rickles and Glenn Campbell.
Did you ever work lounges where the drummer did the...
How about a little good evening? How's
good
your
evening.
Mother? How's your family? Anything?
All right, how is your lovely wife, Barbara, and your young child?
She dies Thursday.
No, come on. How is Barbara? We have not seen each other for some time.
First of all, why did you louse up all my jobs? Hey, just you're on 10 years. He's got it made. By the way, the rodeo pony died.
Hi, I'm Glenn Campbell.
Out here he comes out with, hi, folks. Gee, I want to sing my song. My mother climbing a mountain top. Hallelujah, brother. In the back he's going, let's get brought. No, I'm not sure. That's a joke. Glenn's happily married like I am. You've been married. I've been married. You've had a few mistakes. I've had only one shot at it. The golden gong, they call it. Ned, you're just perfect.
Well, if you're successful...
You're going to be in court so long the judge is going to doze off.
Well, if you're as successful at marriage as you are at television shows, you've got a lot coming up, haven't you?
What they call jamming it to the big guy. Hi, Johnny, but see, that's the great secret about you and I, because people think, you know, they always think, hey, if you're a sarcastic, attacking kind of guy like I'm not through yet, Glenn.
Before you start, I want to say something.
Sure, Glenn. Could you do me a favor?
You have been the most miscast person I have ever seen on television. If you could come out and do what you do here on the Tonight Show, you could have a top 10 show anytime in the week.
No, I think. Yeah.
And there's a lot of people out there that could agree with you.
Provided they syndicate the life of Adolf Hitler,
right.
You mean.
No, really, I honestly believe...
I'm sitting here like I'm Eichmann. Man. Why am I sitting here like this? I'm sitting here like I'm in a glass booth and you're two Israelis voting on me. Don't vote on me, I'm doing all right, quietly. You do what you do. Come on, Ben and Bob Jack, come out and shoot fire. Right. Let's do what he does, you know. Hello,
Could you imagine seeing that every week? Wouldn't that be beautiful? That's the funniest man I've ever saw in my life. Yeah. I didn't see you doing that when you come in as the lawyer, baby, going, oh, yes, dear, we're going to be in the car in a moment, and you sit down. If you did that, that would be hilarious. That's fantastic. The guys agree with me.
You know what's scary? He's got you and I listening. A big klutz, he stood up. I mean, we go to parties together. He's in the corner going, my brother died, my uncle came home. Mother Goose, I'm Duck, Duck, Duck. Out here became a loud pain in the you know what.
You're going to say,
there goes the image right there.
Rickles. Do we know what year that is?
Yeah, that was in 1973, and Dom DeLuise was also there.
So those are the classics.
Very good night.
See, what's really funny is you got Glenn Campbell saying that Rickles should have his own show every week. And then I guess it was like 4 years later, he got CPO Sharkey. So that was pre-CPO Sharkey. And CPO Sharkey, I believe, only lasted 2 seasons. I loved that show. I thought that show was hilarious. But there it is, Rickles. He killed every time. Every time. He and Rodney. You could always count on those guys for
classic comedy when they would come on the Tonight Show. So there it is. We play classic Carson clips every morning right around 2:30, and you can watch the Johnny Carson Show on Antenna TV every night. All right. Jim Ryan is here. Jim, you like Don Rickles?
I love Don Rickles.
Yeah, he's the best, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
All right. So when does your Jimmy Webb interview, when are you going to post that?
So I'm waiting to see. It may not be till June now. What he's been doing is he's been curating Spotify playlists at 73. He's trying to figure out all of these ways to remain relevant during this and reach an audience. So he's been doing the Spotify playlist, and he also wants to do a living room talk show concert show that he'll broadcast on Facebook Live, and he's trying to figure out the specifics of that. So it was really fascinating to hear him explain all this stuff and why he wants to do it.
That's very cool.
Yeah, he's really bummed that he can't be out on the road. So it's gonna get timed around the next Spotify playlist, and we're kind of waiting to see when that's gonna be.
Okay, cool. We'll keep our eyes and our ears peeled for that.
But yeah, speaking of Glenn Campbell, that's amazing, right?
Yeah, Glenn Campbell. Yeah. So good. Okay, we're going to play a round of Rock of Ages, Jim.
All right.
So I will ask you questions, and then...
I will screw them up epically.
And then Tom will ask me questions, and whoever has the most answers correct, obviously, wins a Buick.
I could use a Buick right now.
Yeah, I could use a Buick, too, especially because they're showing Tommy Boy and Billy Madison at the drive-in.
Yes.
This weekend.
I saw that line of cars on Friday. Oh. Get in there. That was unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, that's for the Flintstones in Jurassic Park. I mean, I can't imagine what the crowd is going to be like for Tommy Boy and Billy Madison. I think people are going to start.
Seriously.
Start lighting up today.
That's amazing.
That's such a great double feature, man. It's so much fun. It's so much fun.
When's the last time you were at a drive-in?
Oh, it's been a long time.
Yeah, same here. I was at a drive-in one time.
You were only at a drive-in once?
Gladiator. That was it.
Gladiator. Gladiator at the drive-in?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was it. Uh-huh. One time.
Yeah. That was the only movie? It was in a double? Because normally it's a double feature.
That's what I remember is Gladiator.
Gladiator. Do you remember what drive-in?
Which one? Yeah, it was on, because I grew up in Crestwood. It was way on the south side, and it's gone now.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember where. Okay. Yeah, it was on the south side somewhere.
Yeah, we used to go to the Twin in Wheeling.
Okay.
It was called the Twin, but they had three screens, so I don't...
Did it start with two?
I guess. It must have. And then they had another, but I remember there were three screens at the Twin. So,
well, I mean, these are such interesting like ramifications of where we're at right now, right? That there could be a resurgence in 2020 of the drive-ins.
I know.
Who would have ever seen that? It's insane.
It's crazy, but it's awesome, I think.
Yeah, I love it.
One of the few bright spots that's going on right now. So, all right, we've got Rock of Ages, and these are trivia questions that go through time. So, are you ready?
No.
Okay, here we go. 50s and 60s, okay?
Okay.
Dick Dale is best known as the King of Blank Guitar.
Surf?
That's absolutely correct, my friend.
Yeah.
How about that?
There you go.
Wow, way to start off. Yeah.
We don't usually say that to me during this, but yeah, thank you.
That's very, very good. Surf guitar. Okay.
All right, Nick, 50s and 60s.
What?
Name the Scott McKenzie song that is subtitled, Be Sure to Wear Flowers in Your Hair.
Oh, If You're Going to San Francisco?
Yeah.
I'm gonna say San Francisco? It's just San Francisco.
Oh.
But I think that deserves it.
Yeah, San Francisco.
It's just San Francisco is the title of the song.
Okay.
That one's under protest.
Yeah. Can I get the judges on this one?
Yeah. All right. Are you ready? We're tied at one.
Yes.
70s, 80s. You ready?
Yes.
What song of About Disguises, written by Leon Russell and recorded by George Benson, was the first in history to top jazz, R&B, and pop charts?
About Disguises?
Yeah.
No idea. I love Leon Russell, And the only George Benson song I can think of off the top of my head is a horrible one. So I'm just going to say Breezin.
Is it Breezin? No, it's The Masquerade. I wouldn't have got that in 80 years.
Don't know that one.
The Masquerade.
I'm going to have to call it up on my George Benson.
Yeah. I think George Benson, I think on Broadway.
Broadway, sure.
That's the opening of All That Jazz, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. Okay. So we're still tied at one, but now I might be able to pull ahead here.
Let's see. 70s and 80s. Name the Alicia Bridges song that is subtitled Disco Round.
What?
Alicia Bridges. Disco Round.
It's a subtitle, but there's another title.
You want the title to the song.
I have no idea.
I Love the Nightlife.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
I love the nightlife. I like the boogie.
Sure.
Wow, we're still tied at one. This is exciting, Jim.
A Clash of the Titans.
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. Can't believe you saw Gladiator at the drive-in.
Never cease to amaze.
Yeah. And by the way, that's not a good movie.
No.
It's not. I don't care what anybody says. It won Best Picture and all this other stuff. It's not good.
I don't think Russell Crowe's a real good person either.
Yeah. He likes to throw phones at people.
Throw phones. That's exactly what I was thinking of.
First thing you thought of. Okay, Jim, hang on, all right?
Yes.
All right, Jim Ryan is here. We've got more of the Rock of Ages music quiz coming up. And if you want to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday and it's a jokey time. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. Our good friend Jim Ryan is here. Check out Radio Jim Ryan. And you can get all the stuff that he's writing about music-wise and entertainment-wise. And Jim joins us once a month. Hi, Jim.
Howdy, Nick.
Okay, we have to get back to our crazy quiz here, Rock of Ages. We are tied at one.
A thrilling conclusion.
Are you ready?
Yeah, sure.
90s, 2000s. Oh, come on, man. All right, let me just say this. If you don't get this...
Please don't preface it with that, but go ahead.
What group's 1991 album cover features a naked baby submerged in a pool being lured by a dollar bill on a fish hook?
Right said Fred. No, it's Nirvana.
Yes, it is Nirvana.
Nirvana.
That really was a question on this card. All right.
All right, Nick. 90s, 2000s.
What happened?
Within one, what year was Marilyn Manson born?
Come on, man.
Within one.
Within 1 year?
Yeah.
What year? Within one. 66.
I have my guess here.
Just a bit outside. 1969.
69 was my guess.
Was that your guess? That was your guess?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm like, that guy's got to be about 50.
Yeah. Yeah. Just about. All right. Okay, you're winning 2-1, Jim.
All right. This is rare.
You ready?
Yes.
Beatles or Elvis? Which early American singer, known for warbling on a megaphone, starred with Elvis in Live a Little, Love a Little?
Warbling into a megaphone. Scott Weiland. No, I have no idea who was in that movie. I don't even have a guess. Jeez, who is it?
It's Rudy Valley.
Rudy
Valley. All right.
Duly noted.
The first thing popped into my head was Scott Weiland.
Likewise.
Seriously, that's the first thing that came into my mind. So, all right. What happened now?
All right, Beatles and Elvis.
Yeah, man.
What Elvis tune played over the closing credits of comedian Rosen Barr's big screen debut, She-Devil?
What? Come on, man.
There's actually a hint there. What Elvis tune played over the closing credits of comedian Roseanne Barr's big screen debut, She-Devil?
I mean, that movie is unwatchable. Devil May Care?
So close.
Suede Shoes?
No, you're the devil in disguise.
You're the devil in disguise, of course.
Yeah.
All right. Still 2-1. Jim, you're ahead.
All right.
Okay. You ever see She-Devil?
No.
Not a long time. I remember it, though, Roseanne.
Terrible movie. Terrible movie. Okay. All right. You ready? 50s, 60s.
All right.
In 69, which song by the Edwin Hawkins Singers became the most successful gospel hit ever?
The most successful gospel hit ever.
By the Edwin Hawkins Singers in 1969.
Wow. Oh, Jesus, I have no idea. Wow, that was not a pun there. What is it? I don't know. I have
oh,
no
happy,
idea.
Oh, happy day. You know that song?
Yeah, no.
Oh, you don't? Okay. Oh, happy day. That's it. Okay, still 2-1.
We're really killing it tonight.
This is a real barn burner.
We're really doing great here. All right, what's next?
All right, 50s, 60s. What Chuck Berry song was reportedly named after a tube of mascara found on the recording studio floor?
Come on. I get the Edwin Hawkins Singers, and you get that?
It was by a tube of what? Mascara?
A tube of mascara, yeah.
Come on, Nick.
A tube of mascara. I don't know. Eyelashes?
No. Maybe
must
she's
be Maybelline. Nick.
Yeah,
come
maybe
on.
She's born with it.
Oh, Maybelline.
Maybe it's Maybelline.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I still wouldn't have gotten it. All right. You knew that one, Jim?
I did know that one.
Wow. Okay. You ready? 70s, yep. 80s. England's Joy Division named themselves after a room in Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. B, a prostitution wing in a Nazi concentration camp.
Well, okay.
Or C, the nickname of a drug rampant recording studio.
I'm going to go with C.
No.
It's not?
What is it?
It's B. It's the Nazi concentration camp.
It really is that one?
Prostitution.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, okay. Prostitution ring on the...
Yeah, the Joy Division.
Good God.
Well...
Yeah, they weren't exactly known for their upbeat attitude.
Well, no.
That one's right in your wheelhouse, Tom. I know that.
Well, he loves that band.
Yes, he does.
Yes. All right. What am I doing?
All right. 70s and 80s. What show did MTV start in 1985 to appeal to its older viewers?
What show did
In what year?
In 1985.
What show did they start to appeal to its older?
Yeah, it's older viewers. What show?
Well.
I don't know. 1985. Liquid television.
No. VH1.
That's not a show. That's a network.
It's not a show, yeah.
I'm reading the
Well,
the
they're wrong. It's a network. It's not a show.
But did it start? I think it started as a block.
No,
wow,
I
didn't
think
know
it
that.
Started as a network. I'm pretty sure it was like a, yeah.
With Rosie O'Donnell.
Right.
If you'll recall, a very early DJ on VH1.
Yep. Okay. 90s, 2000, it's still 2-1. We got a barn burner here.
have either of us gotten anything since the first round?
I don't think so.
Well, apparently one of us did, but okay.
90s, 2000.
Yes.
What artist recorded the 1997 live album A Fistful of Alice?
Fistful of Alice. I hope it's Alice in Chains, but I don't think it is.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah, I'm not coming up with anything else. Who is it?
Alice Cooper.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cooper. When I think 90s, I think Alice Cooper. Okay.
Well, he did. He released it in 97. Okay, what's the?
That was his decade.
Yeah, it was.
All right, 90s, 2000s. The band The Foo Fighters derived their name from a typo of their original name, The Food Fighters, an abbreviation of Kung Fu Fighters or UFOs seen in World War II.
I'll go with C.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Foo Fighters. All right, we're tied at two. Oh! The excitement, wow. The excitement never ends.
Yeah.
What a world.
Okay, Beatles or Elvis, you ready?
Sure.
In the Beatles' response song, Hello, Goodbye, what is Paul McCartney's answer to why?
I never get these Beatles questions right. I'm trying to go through lyrics in my head here. I don't know. Wow, how many questions have I replied I don't know to tonight? That's
well,
terrible.
By the way, that's actually the answer.
That's what I was going for.
Uh-huh. I'll give it to you. That's actually the answer is I don't know.
Good Lord.
Okay. All right, last question.
All right, Beatles and Elvis.
Okay.
Fill in the title of this Paul McCartney composition. Here, there, and blank.
Everywhere.
Bingo.
I was going to say, I'm like, wow. I've...
Wow. All right.
We're going to have to split the Buick, and I don't feel like I deserve it at all.
Well, we've got three each. This was really a bad showing for
Not at the top of your game,
oh,
guys.
Oh man. Is it just that we're tired? Is that what's happening? Is the pandemic draining our brains?
It could be that.
Oh man.
Let's go with that.
All right, we'll go with that. All right, Jim. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Thank you, Nick. I appreciate it. It's nice to laugh with you guys.
Stay safe, buddy. We'll talk to you next time, okay?
Thank you.
All right. There he is. Jim Ryan, everybody. Radio Jim Ryan is where you can follow him. Radio Jim Ryan. Great guy and joins us once a month. Hey, we are going to talk about some essential Little Richard songs. We got some Little Richard on Johnny Carson and then products invented by moms in honor of yesterday being Mother's Day. That's coming up right here on 720 WGN. If you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4, as we are every weekday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. That'll be coming up a little bit later on. And if you want to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200. We're going to talk Little Richard here. Little Richard passed away over the weekend. He was 87. You can't overestimate his contribution to music, like the architect of rock and roll. And if you want to jump in here with your thoughts about Little Richard, and we would love to hear from you. Founding father of rock and roll, broke musical barriers, died at age 87. Little Richard, a founding father of rock and roll whose fervent shrieks, flamboyant garb, and joyful gender-bending persona embodied the spirit and sound of that new art form. He died on Saturday. He was 87. The musician's son, Danny Jones Penniman, confirmed the pioneer's death to Rolling Stone. Cause of death was bone cancer, according to his lawyer, Bill Sobel. Starting with Tutti Frutti in 1956, Little Richard cut a series of unstoppable hits. Long Tall Sally, Rip It Up that same year, Lucille in 1957, Good Golly Miss Molly in 1958, driven by his simple, pumping piano, gospel-influenced vocal exclamations, and sexually charged, often gibberish lyrics. I heard Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis, and that was it, Elton John told the Rolling Stone in 1973. I didn't ever want to be anything else. I'm more of a Little Richard stylist than a Jerry Lee Lewis, I think. Jerry Lee is a very intricate piano player and very skillful, but Little Richard is more of a pounder. Although he never hit the top 10 again after 1958, Little Richard's influence was massive. The Beatles recorded several of his songs, including Long Tall Sally. And Paul McCartney singing on those tracks and on the Beatles' own I'm Down paid tribute to Little Richard's shredded throat style. His songs became part of the rock and roll canon, covered over the decades by everyone from the Everly Brothers, the Kinks, and Creedence Clearwater Revival to Elvis Costello and the Scorpions. Elvis popularized rock and roll, Stephen Van Zandt tweeted after the news broke. Chuck Berry was a storyteller. Richard was the archetype. Little Richard's stage persona, his pompadours, his androgynous makeup, and glass beaded shirts also set the standard for rock and roll showmanship. Prince, to cite one obvious example, owed a great sizable debt to the musician. Prince is the Little Richard of his generation, Richard told Joan Rivers in 1989 before looking into the camera and addressing Prince. I was wearing purple before you were wearing it. If you love anything about the flamboyance of rock and roll, then you have Little Richard to thank, said the Black Keys' Dan Auerbach, a longtime fan. And where would rock and roll be without flamboyance? To be the first, you have to be able to be uninhibited back then. You have to not give a blank. Born Richard Wayne Penniman, December 5th, 1932, in Macon, Georgia, he was one of 12 children who grew up around uncles who were preachers. I was born in the slums. My daddy sold whiskey, bootleg whiskey, he told the Rolling Stone in 1970. Although he sang in a nearby church, his father, Bud, wasn't supportive of his son's music and accused him of being gay, resulting in Penniman leaving home at 13 and moving in with a white family in Macon. But music stayed with him. One of his childhood friends was Otis Redding, and Penniman heard R&B, blues, and country while working on a concession stand in the Macon City Auditorium. After performing at the TikTok Club in Macon and winning a local talent show, Penniman landed his first record deal with RCA in 1951. He became Little Richard when he was about 15 years old, when the R&B and blues worlds were filled with acts like Little Esther and Little Milton. He had also grown tired of people pronouncing his last name as Pennyman. He learned his distinctive piano style from Escarita, a South Carolina singer and pianist who wore his hair in a high black pompadour. So, Little Richard. What was your first? Do you remember listening to Little Richard at all when you were younger, Tom?
It wasn't on a ton in my house, but I think the first time I became aware of him was... It's a little embarrassing. I think he was in an episode of Full House.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right.
And I was like, who is this weird guy?
Yeah.
Who is this really strange guy? And yeah, and he performs the Itsy Bitsy Spider.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy is so wild. And then, I started learning a little bit more about him, understood, you know, his place in rock and roll, and, listened to Tutti Frutti, listened to, it's Long Tall Sally, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Long Tall Sally is my favorite. But that's also because it appears in the opening of Predator.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, when they're in the chopper riding into the jungle, they're all in there just listening to Long Tall Sally on a jukebox, or boombox rather.
Boombox. He was cast in early rock and roll movies like Don't Knock the Rock and The Girl Can't Help It. And a sign of how segregated the music business and radio were at the time, though Pat Boone's milquetoast covers of Tutti Frutti and Long Tall Sally were also both released in 1956, charted as well, if not higher, than Richard's own versions. You got to be kidding me. Penniman later told Rolling Stone that he made sure to sing Long Tall Sally faster than Tutti Frutti so that Boone couldn't copy him as much. By the 70s, his career was huge in the 50s, tapered off a little bit in the 60s. And by the 70s, Little Richard was making a respectable living on the rock and oldies circuit, immortalized in a searing, sweaty performance in 1973 documentary Let the Good Times Roll. During this time, he also started smoking marijuana and became addicted to cocaine while at the same time returning to his gospel roots. Little Richard also dismantled sexual stereotypes in rock and roll. even if he confused many of his fans along the way. During his teen years and into his early rock stardom, his stereotypical flamboyant personality made some speculate about his sexuality. But that flamboyance didn't derail his career. In the 1984 biography, The Life and Times of Little Richard, written with his cooperation, he denounced homosexuality as contagious. It's not something you're born with. So, legendary musician, architect of rock and roll, Little Richard. We're going to talk about some essential Little Richard songs, and if you want to jump in with your thoughts, then it's maybe the first time you ever saw Little Richard or the first time you ever heard him. Absolute legend, passed away over the weekend, and we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200.
When I think of those eastern lights, muggy nights, the curtains drawn in the little room downstairs. Prima Donna, Lord, you really should have been there, sitting like a princess perched in her electric chair. And just one more beat.
Yeah. Morning, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 4. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday and it's a jokey time. We're talking Little Richard, passed away over the weekend, legend. And if you have your Little Richard favorite songs or memories or anything like that, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. So we've got some essential songs, Little Richard songs, and we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. So we also have an appearance of Little Richard on Johnny Carson's show. So this is from, what, you said 1985. Okay. Always entertaining, always very cool. So let's hear a little bit of Little Richard on The Tonight Show.
Look, you've gone through a lot of cycles in your life, here and then down and then up and so forth. You've had to just... Do you regret, if you had to do it all over again, would you change anything?
Yes, you know, I would change this journey. You know, I've sold so many records, and I've never been paid. I've sold more records, I believe, than just anybody, mostly in the business. I've never received a check in 25 years.
Now, how does that work? I don't understand.
Well, when I first signed with the record company, they was given a half a cent, and I never did get the other half to make the penny.
Ah.
You know, and so they never did pay me, you know, and I called up Holmes, the court, and he didn't send nothing. I called Mr. Trust, he didn't send nothing. I called R. Roop, he didn't send nothing.
Yeah.
Then Donald Duck did it the other night. He didn't even crack nothing to me either.
Yeah.
Saw him cracking Tutti Frutti. Tutti, woo!
Yeah. Never got any money from Tutti Frutti.
Tutti Frutti haven't gotten a dime. And I saw Esther Phillips passed away not long ago, and Big Mama Thornton and Joe Tex. These people, they couldn't even be buried. $200 casket.
Yeah.
No money. And I just felt that the book that I have out of my life, The Life and Times of Little Richard, which is with the Beatles, Paul wrote the foreword on the book.
Yeah.
Everybody's in this book, and it's hidden all over the world. I'm going to take half of my royalties to build a home called the Bouquet of Love. You know, charity begins at home. It's good to feed people everywhere, but let somebody eat at home, too. You know, it's good to feed people at home.
Were you able to say what money you did make? You were living pretty in a fast lane there when you were...
I was in a fast lane. It was so fast, I never stopped to pick up no money.
You just went right.
There he is. It's true, he got massively screwed out of royalties. A lot of people at the beginning, you know, who started that genre didn't make the kind of money that they should have made. But yeah, Little Richard, he was something, man.
Didn't Chuck Berry used to get paid up front in cash?
Chuck Berry, this is what Chuck Berry would do. He would walk into a venue. The venue would have to set up the band. So they would bring in musicians to play behind him. Chuck Berry would pull up in his Cadillac. He'd get out of the car with his guitar. He'd walk in the front door. He'd go up to the manager, and he would say, pay me now. It would be it was always cash. Chuck Berry would get an envelope full of cash, put it in his pocket, open up his case, bring his guitar out, you know, just nod at the band, because everybody knows Chuck Berry songs. He would play an hour. He'd put his guitar away, take his guitar case, walk out, get in his Cadillac, and drive away. That's when a friend of mine went to see him at the Cubby Bear. Went to see him at the Cubby, and that's exactly what happened. He pulled up a Clark and Addison in his Cadillac, got out of his Cadillac, which he just left there at Clark and Addison, because, you know, they're going to give Chuck Berry a ticket. So he gets out, walks into the Cubby Bear, right through the crowd, goes backstage. Evidently, nobody can see what's going on, but evidently he gets his envelope full of cash, puts it in his back pocket, brings his guitar out, never met the guys on stage in the band, never met him before, played an hour, walked out the front door of Cubby Bear, went, got in his Cadillac, and drove off. These are old school guys, man. You know what I mean? These were old school. And they had to deal with a lot of crap, too, you know? So, but yeah, Little Richard, here's some essential songs. What is left there to say about Little Richard that hasn't already been said better himself? He says, "I am the innovator. I am the originator. I am the emancipator. I am the architect. I am rock and roll," he once exclaimed to an interviewer before adding, "Now, I'm not saying that to be vain or conceited." No, Little Richard, born Richard Penniman in Macon, Georgia in 1932, was just being honest. His influence is incalculable. The Beatles learned their ecstatic falsetto shouts from him. James Brown said that he was the first to put the funk in rhythm. In his yearbook, Bob Dylan listed that his ambition was to join Little Richard. A 9-year-old David Bowie bought a saxophone, hoping to do that as well. Bowie's glam period, the prancing and strutting of Mick Jagger, the psychosexual convolutions of Prince, all would be hard to imagine without Richard's androgynous flamboyance leading the way. Little Richard was the freakiest of all great rock and rollers. His sexual expressiveness was untempered by Elvis Presley's down-home charm, Chuck Berry's sly wit, Jerry Lee Lewis's wolfish malevolence, Buddy Holly's pop sensibility, and Fat Domino's geniality. Richard's feral woo conflated to the spiritual and the orgasmic in a way that changed the way musicians communicated desire forever. As Jimi Hendrix put it, "I want to do with my guitar what Little Richard does with his voice." So here are some of the essential songs. "Long Tall Sally," from 1956. Tutti Frutti specialized in lascivious nonsense, but its sequel, Long Tall Sally, barreled forth on lusty innuendo. Little Richard spots Uncle John sneaking Sally through the alley, then claims he's going to tattle to Aunt Mary. But the way he sings the song, it's clear he's on the side of the revelers, not the scold. What the two are doing isn't clear, but subterfuge and Sally's bald head suggest something illicit and even freaky.
Mary bought Uncle John. He claimed he has a misery, but he's having a lot of fun. Oh, baby. Yes, baby. Woo, baby. Having me some fun tonight. Yeah. Well, long tall Sally, she's a bit of a species guy. Everything that Uncle John needs. Oh, baby. Yes, baby.
So great. Yeah, it's not a place where good guys go. This wildness earned Richard his first R&B chart topper and first top 10 pop hit and proved irresistible for generations of rockers, chief among them the Beatles. John Lennon said, "When I heard it, it was so great I couldn't speak." And Paul McCartney studied it, turning it into a showcase during early performances of the Fab Four. How about another essential one? You ready for another essential song? "Slippin' and Slidin'," from 1956. We have a little bit of that one.
Slipping and a sliding, peeping and a hiding, been told a long time ago.
Little Richard told Rolling Stone in 1970, another cat put Slippin' and Sliding Out before I did, Eddie Bowe, and it was a hit by him in New Orleans. They put mine out the following week, and it killed him because he didn't have the rhythm, you see. He didn't have the thing that I have. Comparing this rock and roll fireball to Bowe's cool New Orleans R&B shuffle titled I'm Wise let us identify his particular thing. Jerry Lee Lewis, Chuck Berry, Sideman, Johnny Johnson have been more melodically ingenious, but Little Richard's percussive keys smashing has a Little Richard song requires taking on the rhythmic lifting so the master drummer Earl Palmer can get fancy underneath. Another essential, Ready Teddy, 1956. We got
ready, set, go, man, go. I got a gal that I love, so I'm ready. Ready, ready, Ted, I'm ready. Ready, ready, Ted, I'm ready. Ready, ready, Ted, I'm ready, ready, ready to rock and roll. Going to the corner, pick up my sweetie pie. She's my rock and roll, baby. She's the apple of my eye. I'm ready.
That's right, man. So great. Ready, set, go, man, go. That opening lyric is a starter pistol, and Richard's voice is the blast signaling that the race is on, sending singer and musician sprinting past one another toward the end of the chorus. Each verse is essentially an a cappella shout, punctuated by bursts of percussion that build to the sexual excitement of the chorus, making Richard's claim that he's just headed to a sock hop sound like the kind of lie that you're going to tell your parents to get out of the house. Ready, Teddy. All right. Let's take a break here. I got some weather, and then we're going to talk more about Little Richard and some of his more essential songs. And if you want to jump in here with your memories or your thoughts about the great Little Richard, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Today, partial sunshine in the morning. Temperatures around daybreak will be around the mid-30s. They will peak into the low 50s. Fair overnight. Areas of frost, low in the low 30s, colder, and near 40 downtown. For Tuesday, tomorrow, high pressure approaches. We'll see abundant sunshine. Temperatures will moderate a bit, climbing into the upper 50s. For Wednesday, partial sun gives way to thickening clouds. Temperatures will be in the mid-60s and low 50s in the city. Showers and thunderstorms will become likely overnight. Thursday, breezy and mild, periodic thunderstorms, most numerous early and again at night. Heavy rainfall is a possibility. Temperatures will be around 70 degrees despite the cloudiness. And for Friday, showers, thunderstorms will linger, and then they will turn partly sunny. High will reach the low 70s inland, near 60 along the lake. It's currently 41 degrees at O'Hare. It's 40 at Midway, 39 at the lakefront. Okay, we will take a quick break. When we come back, more Little Richard songs that are essential, and we would love to hear from you, too, on 720 WGN. All right, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, we head over to Bradley Place, the TV side of WGN, get some news information from those great people in the early morning news, and then back here at 5 o'clock with the great Bob Surratt for your morning drive. WGN is here for you 24-7 to keep you informed, to keep you company, and to get you through this, and we're all going to get through this together. 312-981-7200 is the number. Little Richard passed away over the weekend, 87 years old. It's hard to measure, you know, his contribution to rock and roll, one of the architects of rock and roll. And so we're going through some of his great songs, some of his essential songs. And we would love to hear from you if you want to jump in with your thoughts on Little Richard. You ever seen Down and Out in Beverly Hills?
I have not, no.
Oh, man, it's a great movie. A great movie. Nick Nolte, Richard Dreyfuss, and Little Richard. Yeah, a really, really, really funny movie. And Little Richard's great in it.
Paul Mazursky?
Yeah.
Wow. Bette Midler?
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a good time.
Oh, it's a really good movie. It's a terrific movie. And Little Richard's hilarious in it. He plays the wacky next-door neighbor. It's one of my favorite Nolte performances. Truly one of my favorite Nick Nolte performances. And there's a lot of good Nick Nolte performances. Lots of good ones. It was a big comeback for Dreyfuss, that movie, because he was pretty much, you know, like his career had not seen anything for a while. But then that was like a big comeback. And then he did, so that's the one that kind of started his comeback. But then Stakeout came out. Boom! Richard Dreyfuss was back. You ever seen Stakeout? You haven't seen Stakeout?
No.
Oh, man, you got to see Stakeout. Got to see Stakeout. Him and Emilio Estevez. It's a really great movie. Really, really great movie. And that was the discovery. That was when Madeline Stowe was like, oh, who's this? Aidan Quinn, too. Chicago's own Aidan Quinn. So Little Richard was in, yes, he was in Down and Out in Beverly Hills. And the concert movie from the 70s that they were mentioning in the article was amazing. Let the Good Times Roll. Amazing. It's all of those it's all of those musicians from that era, but it's in the 70s. So it's got a whole different vibe to it, you know, because they're a little bit older. He kills in it, too. I mean, he's Little Richard. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. The great Little Richard has passed away. All right, here's another essential song, Heebie Jeebies.
Baby, put the janks on me. I got the heebie jeebies and can't get well. I got the heebie jeebies and the Jew got the tail lip. If I'm a baby, then no, no, well, I'm gonna ring your door till I break your bell. You gotta jump back, heebie jeebies, you gotta get back, heebie jeebies, you gotta jump back, heebie jeebies, you gotta get back, heebie jeebies, you gotta jump back, heebie jeebies, I'm a bad luck, baby, put the janks on me. I got the heebie jeebies.
Such a great song. Little Richard's songs epitomized rock and roll's commitment to speed and typically all the optimism, enthusiasm, and restlessness that came along with it. But this frantic burst of song, Richard somehow seemingly sings faster than the beat, and though he needs to accelerate is beyond his control. It's no surprise that the newest and most rocking of the 60s soul greats, Otis Redding, who called Richard my inspiration and actually performed with Richard's band, the Upsetters, got his professional start performing heebie-jeebies at a talent show. Otis went on to win for 15 weeks straight. 15 weeks straight! All right, how about All Around the World?
All around the world, rock and roll is the only place. Rock and roll is the only place. You can hear those jukebox jumping all night and all through the day. All the flat top cats with the rock and roll queens just a rocking and a rolling in their red and blue jeans. All around the world.
This is one of my favorites. That's one of my favorite Little Richard songs. I'm trying to remember what movie that's featured in. And I can't remember, but it is featured in a movie, All Around the World. Little Richard's definition of rock and roll was pretty simple. Fast R&B. Played up-tempo, you call it rock and roll. At a regular tempo, you call it rhythm and blues. Jumpy, light-bottomed, and horn-driven, All Around the World stands apart rhythmically from Richard's more frantically adrenaline-powered hits, but if it's a little slower, it's no less exuberant and definitely no less rock and roll. Girl Can't Help It. Yeah. This is from, of course, the Jane Mansfield movie of the same name.
Can't help it, the girl can't help it. Can't help it, the girl can't help it. If she walks by, the mean folks get enrolled. The girl can't help it. If she winks an eye, the bread slice turn to toast. Can't help it. The girl can't help it. If she got a lot of what they call the mold.
great. Usually Little Richard needed no support. He provided enough vocal power for an entire quartet. The Girl Can't Help It is an exception that proves the rule. On this title tune from the 1956 Jane Mansfield movie, Richard indulges in a call and response with anonymous support, shouts that only ratchet up the madness of a 2.5 minute long catcall. The beat swings. Roll tips a hat to the fact that it was originally slotted for Fats Domino, but Richard pushes his vocals into the red with his full-throated wail that lends the record the air of unbridled sexuality, which is really present in every song he's ever done. You know what I mean? Like, you couldn't keep the sex out of a Little Richard song, even if you tried. Here's Carrie on WGN. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, morning, Nick.
Hey.
One thing I remembered, and actually I just Googled it before I called. He became an ordained minister.
Right.
And he officiated celebrity weddings. He actually married Tom Petty. He officiated the ceremony. He married Tom Petty. He officiated the ceremony for Tom Petty, and I didn't know this until I looked it up, and also Cyndi Lauper and Stevie Van Zandt.
Ah, there you go.
It's pretty wild, isn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. He was something else, yep. Man. I mean, he really was. He was really
one of a kind, man. One of a kind.
Nobody, there's never going to be another Little Richard. There's no, there's no question about it.
You got that right, man.
All right, Carrie, thanks, buddy.
Take care. Yep.
Yeah. This is a jam, Rip It Up. All these songs, by the way, so far were all from 1956. Every one of these classic songs from the same year.
Saturday night and I just got paid. Fool about my money, don't try to save. My heart say go, go. Have time cause it's Saturday night. Now I'm feeling fine. I'm gonna rock it up. I'm gonna rip it up. I'm gonna shake it up. Go ball it up. I'm gonna rock it up. And ball tonight.
There's definitely a Deep Purple song that rips off that opening line. Saturday night, I just got paid.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot remember for the... It's Speed King. That's it. Speed King by Deep Purple rips that line.
There's an implied violence lying within the title of Rip It Up, Little Richard's second R&B chart topper. Despite the promise of mayhem, Rip It Up actually contains a little bit of breathing room. Richard doesn't scream his vocal. The opposite, actually. He floats his falsetto onto the chorus, and the band swings with ease, turning it into a single that actually grooves. His peers took a different track. Elvis Presley's version rocks harder. The Everly's brothers turned it into a hop. But Little Richard's swing shows his facility with the jump blues, an endearing trait for a rocker who always seemed to operate at full tilt. All right, how about Send Me Some Lovin'? We have a little bit of that.
Send me some lovin'. Send it, I pray. How can I love you when you're so far away? Send me your picture.
It's kind of an unusual vocal performance from Little Richard. Beautiful, though. It says, Little Richard's impact on rock and roll is so unmistakable that his role in the development of soul is sometimes overlooked. He has done so much for our music, Sam Cooke said in 1962, and Otis Redding, as we have seen, was every bit as much of a fan. Comparing this performance to the versions of Send Me Some Lovin' that both soul greats would cut in their own distinctive style shows the different direction that Little Richard's influence could lead. You can hear traces of his caressed consonants and curlicued vowels in Cook's velvety smooth delivery, and when he notches up the intensity, like he's sketching a blueprint for the style of soulfully ragged pleading that Otis Redding would perfect. So, all right, more Little Richard. We're going to talk more about some of these the essential songs, and if you want to jump in with your thoughts on the architect of rock and roll as he's passed away over the weekend, 312-981-7200. Give me some weather. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's jokey time. And then we'll continue and wrap up the show talking about Little Richard
and taking your calls and thoughts. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200.
Ooh, it's the best part of the week, baby. It's time to hear something funny. Here we go with your music intro. Ah!
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Yeah. What'd I say?
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Ah, yes! Here we go!
Ah, yes. It's Monday morning, isn't it? You can always tell when you hear that great theme. My dad calls in to tell a joke. My dad's been telling jokes his whole life, so we thought, hey, why don't we start off the work week with a laugh and have my dad tell a joke? So let's say hello to my dad. Hey, Dad.
Yeah, I'm there.
How you doing?
Good, good.
Good. How's Ma?
Good.
Good. Okay, you got a joke.
Joke number 295.
Wow. All right.
Dave said to his friend, Mary, I just bought in a great new hearing aid. Mary said, are you wearing it? Yep. He replies, it cost me $4,000, but the top of the line. She asked, what kind is it? Dave replied, 1230.
All right. That's a good one, Dad. All right.
Bye, Nick.
Thanks, buddy.
Okay. Okay, bye.
That was jokey, jokey, jokey time. It was a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad told a joke.
You can see that punchline coming a mile away, but it's hilarious. Hilarious.
Funny every time.
Every time. Okay, back to Little Richard, talking about Little Richard. Legendary, legendary musician. And what about Jenny Jenny? Do we have a little bit of that one?
Jenny, 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 won't you come along with me? Jenny, 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 won't you come along with me? Jenny, 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 you know that I love, we can live so happily. Jenny, 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 spin it, spin it, spin, spin it like a spinning top. Spin it, spin, spin it, spin, spin it, spin it, spin.
Not to slight the dynamic interplay between Lee Allen's tenor sax and Alvin Red Tyler's baritone, but Jenny Jenny is a less a song than a miracle of modern American engineering. The hyperkinetic streamlined delivery system that most of the precious of all post-war commodities, Little Richard woos. The sound traveled across the ocean to Liverpool. I could do Little Richard's voice with a wild horse screaming thing, and it was like an out-of-body experience, said Paul McCartney. You've got to leave your current sensibilities away and go about on foot above your head to sing it. So more special stuff about the vocal stylings of Little Richard. Lucille. They describe it like this. Lucille is pure madness. The drums pound and the horns wail, driving their refrain into submission. In the hands of a guitarist, this brassy blare would be called a riff, and that's precisely what resulted when the song was covered over and over and over again by the likes of such heavy rockers as Status Quo, AC/DC, and the Sonics. But it sounded plenty heavy in the hands of the Beatles, too. Nothing topped the original, though, and that's all due to Little Richard, who cries like a man possessed with carnal yearning that, no matter how much he begs and pleads, he knows will never be fulfilled. Here's Larry on WGN. Hi, Larry.
Hey, good morning, Nick. Hey, a lot of times I'll be listening to Little Richard, but, you know, Mitch Ryder and Detroit Wheels are same rhythm, you know, the heavy drums and the keyboards and that. from the same song, Jenny, Jenny.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, little beer buzz going, turn the bows up, man. Good time.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been covered a bunch of times. So many of the Little Richard songs have been covered by so many different artists. It's
I love the saxophones in the song, though. You know, they really get flared out, you know?
Yeah, very, very good. Yeah. All right, Larry, thank you, buddy.
All right, take care.
All right, 312-981-7200 is the number. Keep a Knockin'. Keep a Knockin' from 1957.
Keep a knocking, but you can't come in. Keep a knocking, but you can't come in. Keep a knocking, but you can't come in. Come back tomorrow night and try it again. You said you love me and you can't come in. You said you love me and you can't come in. Woo! You said you love me and you can't come in. Come back tomorrow night and try it again. Woo!
Yeah. I always think of Up in Smoke when I hear the title of this song. Keep on knocking, but you can't come in. John Bonham ripped off Earl Palmer's intro to Keep a Knockin' for Led Zeppelin's Rock and Roll. An acknowledgement that this 1957 single is rock and roll. Purportedly an answer song to Smiley Lewis's laid-back 1955 Shuffle, I Hear You Knockin'. Keep a Knockin' is nothing but noise. So, rock and roll never sounded louder or better or more pure than this. Here's Linda on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Nick. He had such a unique voice, nobody could duplicate it.
Yeah.
Second of all, was he ever married? Because I had heard earlier that he had a son, and did he die broke?
Well, I don't know if he died broke, but yes, he did. He was married. He's got a son.
Was he married when he died? I mean,
I don't think so.
No. Well, he's a wild man in the country, so I can see why he wasn't married long.
Yeah. Yep. All right, Linda. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, honey. Here. Bye.
Yeah. Good golly, Miss Molly. That's such a great song. God, there's so many great songs. This is amazing, the amount of great songs that Little Richard was responsible for.
Well, and as you mentioned, and the short span in which he was able to do it.
Yeah, this is, like, we're just covering 2 years.
Yeah.
Just about 2 years. How about Ooh, My Soul? Elvis may be the king of rock and roll, Little Richard once declared, but I am the queen. He could be cagey or frank about his sexuality, sometimes in the same breath. I believe I'm the founder of gay, he once told John Waters, while admitting nothing.
Baby, 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 don't you know my love is true? Honey, 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 get up off of that money. Love, 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 love. Ooh, my soul. Baby, 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 don't you know my
amazing
love is true?
Oh, well, architect of rock and roll, man. Architect. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You remember that? I've only heard that commercial a couple of times. Just subconsciously gets into your brain. You know what I mean? You hear it like four or five times a night. Yeah. all right. Well, anyway, rest in peace, Little Richard, man. Your contributions to music are just ridiculously huge. Hey, Lane Dolphin is going to be with us. Tomorrow we're going to do some dream analysis on the show, starting tonight at 11 o'clock until tomorrow morning.